session, and our next speaker or person on the stack here of opposition is Penny Masnick. Opposition? Thank you. Joel Masnick? Joel? Joel, you have some comments? Okay, I'm going to keep reading here. Chris Strunk? Okay, well, come and sit on the bench after Joel. And Alexa Richardson? Alexa, are you here? No. Okay, Joel, you have 5 minutes.
Okay.
That's all right. You don't have to lean into the mic. It'll pick up everything.
Okay.
You're cool.
Okay. My name is Joel Masnick, and I live at 533 DF Row, which is immediately adjacent to this development. I just wanted to provide a bit of clarification. The planner's report references 4 public consultations, and I would argue only one was an actual public consultation. The first in October 2011 was a church congregational vote, which none of the neighbors were invited to. The next one was they showed us basically this site plan with the yellow square in it with no details at all about what exactly they're doing here. The third one, there were details about the building and the plan. Great, you can count that. The fourth one was they invited 3 people. 4 of us showed up. We made it clear that we're speaking on behalf of ourselves. We'd be happy to pass along any info that they would give us. They did not provide us with any plans. So that's about it for that. As a native Charleswood resident, I enjoy the peace and quiet and the spacious low-density surroundings that the area offers, and this project threatens these very things that I value. The church has the right to develop their own land, to be sure, but development should be complementary to the existing neighborhood and single-family, and be single-family, it was always intended to be. A giant concrete parking lot with a 3-story, 64-unit, 350-foot building is not complementary to the scale and character of the existing neighborhood. And this project is a self-serving one where the Masons would get a new lodge, which has not really been addressed yet. Here it is. And the church would get a new parking lot they don't have to pay for. So let's clear up this whole issue of shared parking. This is basically the church parking lot. It will be this new area. The church will have 17 spots on their own titled land and make use of their requirement by bylaw through this new property. They will not have enough spots on their own land for parking. All the construction, maintenance, and tax-related costs of the parking lot and the Masonic Lodge will be passed on to the poor Charleswood seniors that they claim to care so much about, making this obviously a for-profit project to the benefit of the Masons and the church. Cost-conscious seniors would rightly find a different place to live where such costs aren't factored into their bills. And the Vassalon was mentioned. It is a real not-for-profit project, mere blocks away from the site, being developed at cost, where the residents are not building a Masonic Lodge or a parking lot for a neighbor, and they again have 12 commitments for 57 unit building that they're planning and have yet to build yet because of lack of demand. If this project is approved, it would take prospective tenants from that same pool that may be interested in the Vassalon project, which would either kill that project or leave both projects in limbo. If this project tonight is approved and construction never happens, sort of great for us, but it will encourage other developers with other big ideas to just propose whatever they want, and we'll be back here over and over again. This would not be a benefit to all Charleswood seniors. They did not mention a price structure yet. They have not formally committed to one, but we did push on that. I can't say if this is fact, but I did hear verbally. It is $170,000 plus to get in and $1,500 a month ongoing. That is very cost prohibitive to seniors. This limits it to high asset and high income seniors, not just Charleswood seniors wanting to age in place. The majority would be persons from other areas that would relocate to a development that destroys the character that actual residents value. That the proposal to have the entrance and exit directly across from the one entrance exit to the church is of concern. The public was not consulted on this major change, as Councillor Haddock-Beck mentioned. The public hearing notice, in fact, was posted after the school closed for the holidays, providing little opportunity for parents to know what was going on. Whether they are for or against this is up to them, but they should have had the right to know, and there is very little opportunity for them to do so. So, as a previous speaker mentioned, the real issue for traffic would be Ridgewood South, but we're compounding the problem by adding that, or adding this potentially, moving the library. So after all that is done, we're doubling the traffic on Dude up in front of a busy school zone. And I just want to address the international report that suggests that the value of our homes wouldn't decrease. That's great that this is international research. That's probably very relevant on the whole, but this is Charleswood and doesn't speak to our specific neighborhood where the character is very low density, lots of green space, wide open, et cetera. It would affect the ability for us to sell our house, the people wanting to live in Charleswood. I'm glad the other person brought up the Fairmont Woods and said the original proposal was not Charleswood, because that original proposal was for a three-story 57-unit proposal, which is bigger than what we're hearing here. That was scaled down to a two-story 43-unit building, which is on twice the landmass. And the primary reasons given for scaling that down were community sentiment and the city characterizing it, as I quote from the planner's report, out of character in a single-family area. And again, currently there are vacancies there. There are also 5 to 7 vacancies at Windmill Way. And as for the Charleswood area as a whole, the rental market vacancy rate right now is 5%, which is the highest in the city. You can check Canada Mortgage and Housing's latest rental market report for that one. So that rejected three-story Fairmont Woods proposal, which was 3 stories, 57 units, would have had a density of 13.2 units per acre. And this one would have over 30 units per acre. Now, I'd also like you to recall, last year, you turned down a proposal to develop 1.1 acres of land for 12-story detached condos at 543 Elmhurst because, and I'm going to quote the supporting reasons, the majority of the neighborhood needs to be on board with the project. The project needs to be a fit with the existing community. There is an existing plan to preserve the specific land use and future planning needs of the community. This decision is consistent with past decisions made recently. So that project would have had a density of 11 units per acre. And again, let's go back to the Fairmont Woods, which the previous person presenting on that said was very generous in terms of their setbacks and their buffer. So let's compare the buffering. On the east side, here we're going to have 71 feet on the Buckingham side. The Fairmont Woods is 84 feet on the east. On the south, here we have 25 feet. At the Fairmont Woods, there's 63 feet. On the west side, where I am, there's as little as 30 feet, and the Fairmont Woods is 56 feet, and that is adjacent to a road, not a house. Where the Fairmont Woods is adjacent to single-family properties, which is 2 sides instead of 4, tree buffer covers almost the entire area. On the south and west sides of this proposal, there will be limited tree buffer. Speaking from my side, on Dieppe, we would have 8 feet of landscape buffering. 8 feet. This is insufficient for privacy and to mitigate the noise and site pollution due to activity of a busy complex. Now, I'd like to point out that the planning report for this project makes no mention of the 2 single-family houses to the north of this site, 4814 and 4724 Roblin, which is a curious omission. They're currently inhabited. These properties would have virtually zero setback and next to no buffer. So the report states that the building is compatible with the neighborhood because, and I quote, the proposed multifamily building's height is predominantly 35 feet. This is considered compatible with the surrounding single-family context as the maximum height for buildings in the single-family zoning districts is 35 feet. So first they're asking for 38 feet, which is in excess of single-family zoning. And do you see any single-family houses in the area that are 35 feet tall? The idea is silly. The idea that there could be is silly. The report continues. that the predominantly 35-foot building will not create any shadowing beyond which would be expected from a single-family dwelling of the same height. Again, we're supposed to take this seriously and believe that, in the first place, a single-family home could be 35 feet tall, and that this 35-foot-tall single-family home could be 350 feet long to create as much shadowing as this multifamily building would be. The project does not adhere to the existing neighborhood shadow plan, which is for single-family homes, and this point was strongly emphasized as a reason for rejecting the condo proposal on Elmhurst. That shadow plan is very much downplayed in our case because, I quote, the shadow plans were never adopted by council as policy that must be followed. Rather, they are considered general guides for future development. So are they important or are they not? I think they are. And in one case, you did too, but in another, apparently not. So the report notes that there is a 40-foot wide piece of land to the east by Buckingham that would be declared a no-build zone, which could allow a road to be built for future orderly development. But another section of the report says the area would remain undisturbed and provide a dense buffer between the multifamily building and the single-family lots to the east. So it gives it points on both sides, which is impossible. It has to be a buffer or a road. It can't be both.
Closer?
Yes, pretty close. So approving this would be inconsistent with past decisions and precedent would be out the window. Residents would have no idea where they stood in the future when these types of things are proposed. I'd just like to mention that I think the city needs to put a bit more emphasis on development in mature communities. Guidelines where they exist are a bit loose and are not officially developed by council. They're very vague and allow projects like this, which very much push the spirit of the guidelines, and even in this case, are over the actual regulations. Now, comparing our infill guidelines document in mature communities with Edmonton's, ours is 22 pages. The meat of it's about 13 pages. It's not publicly available unless you know it exists and you ask someone for it. I had to ask a city planner for it. I couldn't download it. Now, compare this with Edmonton's document of infill guidelines in mature communities. It's 108 pages, and it's downloadable directly from their website. So you can see which city is prioritizing sensitive development more than the other, and which one wants to be more transparent with it, in my opinion. There was some mention that seniors want to age in place in our communities, which is great, but as was mentioned, that is a secondary to aging in place in their own home, which has very much been emphasized by other speakers. And it's been mentioned by someone who is a proponent of this development that they can walk to all these amenities. Well, I hate to say it, but there's a website called walkscore.com, which rates the area by 40 out of 100, meaning it's heavily car dependent. This is one of the trade-offs of living in Charleswood. Its amenities may not be very close, but we all accept that. It's part of the neighborhood. Yes, things should be done to make it easier for people to get around, but plunking this kind of site in there is not one of them. I have a bunch of questions. Should I just ask them now?
Shoot.
Okay. I just wanted to know from city planner what kind of trees you can fit into an eight foot wide area, how close together they could be, how tall would they be when planted, how big would they be when fully grown, what the height and thickness of the trunks and tops would be when fully grown. And second to that, related, is how would the extensive lighting required on the massive interconnected parking lot be properly shielded from adjacent properties?
We'll certainly take the forestry questions under advisement. I don't think the planner can, deal with that with any expertise of the age, height, and width. But the lighting, James, you may be able to give an answer on.
I think the proper channel is that ask you, and at the end of the hearing, okay. You ask me.
Okay. Sure. All right, we'll ask that question of the planner later in the evening. Okay.
So I'd also like to ask that the administrative report for 543 Elmhurst, which is the one that was turned down, mentions that the city communicated to the developer that it recommended the area be developed for single-family homes. There's no mention of that in this for this project. And I have a long-range planning document from the church that states that the city informed them years ago that the area could only be developed for single-family homes. And I'm wondering, from the city's perspective, did this change? If so, when and why?
I have a list of questions as a result of your presentation that when we get to the administration, we'll ask them the okay. questions. Okay?
Is that just about it?
I just wanted a bit of clarification on one of the variances that's requested. It asks for no landscape buffer for a parking area located within 20 feet of a side or rear lot line abutting or adjacent to a residential zoning district. Via email, city planning indicated that this was only applicable to the north side, but the wording is not specific to the north side. If this plan was approved, could this potentially allow for no buffer on the west side?
Do you have any questions of no. Joel? Thank you, Joel. We appreciate it. Okay. Chris Strang.
Hello, Chris Strang, 4815 Robin Boulevard. So the proposal mentions the complete community's direction strategy, and it talks specifically of development that is complementary to the existing scale and character and built form. Most of the area around is zoned residential, small, single-family, large. They are looking to rezone this, obviously, as multifamily, small, and then get a variance on top to build it higher. This is not like a small shift to single-family, medium, etc. If you look around Charleswood, how many 35-foot-tall buildings do you actually see among the houses? There aren't that many. I don't mean the peak of a church. Obviously, that is taller. But the commercial buildings across the way, those are all single-story. Ecole Dieppe, that's single-story. Fairmont Woods, a similar type of residential concept, two blocks away, that's two stories, and it's a double-the-size lot. So, yes, this design meets the letter of the law with some variances. And I know that the city, the church, and the future residents will all have legitimate benefits from this development. And if that's enough, so be it. But please don't look at me and say that this is complementary to the existing scale and character of Charleswood. I looked at the picture boards over there during the break, and the building that is proposed looms above the houses and above the trees like nothing else. You can just look at it. You can see it. That's the passionate bit done. Let me see. Okay. So I have some questions. Schedule B from the proposal lists upgrades to sewers, drainage, waters, and it makes it very clear that there's no charge to the city. That's wonderful. I was just curious if these upgrades to services can increase the taxes or any other fees that would be passed on to the local homeowners. So no charge to the city versus increases due to service upgrades to the homeowners. That's one question. Thank you. The other point is that the area that this is being built on is actually a lowland, and I believe it floods pretty much consistently each year, as does most of that entire block gets flooded. So I'd like to understand how there's going to be sufficient drainage to prevent that flooding, especially since there is parking obviously below grade, so they're going to have to move that water out. What is going to be happening to that water? Is the builder responsible for improving the drainage as far as, say, Dieppe, and then it's a shared cost going from Dieppe to the Assiniboine? I would just like to understand the mechanism and any costs incurred by other parties. And also, I'd just like to double check it. Well, it looks like from the drawings that they are actually dropping the grade around the building substantially, which could be good for homeowners because more water will go in there. But if that is not the case, if in fact the grade is being raised to prevent drainage issues, then your 35/38-foot building to grade, and if the grade has actually been increased by, say, 2 feet, that would make it additionally higher visually to the rest of the world. So just a few questions, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Do you have a question? No. Thank you, sir. Okay, Brian Parker. Okay, Brian's coming down. Stein Hibbert. Okay, he'll be next. Take the bench over here. Oh, your team. Okay, Lori Liwa?
Yes. Yeah,
all right. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, I'm Brian Parker. This is my wife, Lori Liwa, and we reside at 538 Cathcart Street, Winnipeg, Manitoba. And just to establish our street cred, I've lived in Charleswood for the entire time I've been in Winnipeg over the period of the last 40 years or so. My wife and I have a vested interest, even though we don't live directly adjacent to this particular building, we have a vested interest in the outcome of this meeting as we live adjacent to an unoccupied property that has previously been, and if this proposal is successful, I suspect will again be subject to a high-density residential infill proposal, development proposal. The outcome of this process affects us and the situations of hundreds of other Charleswood residents who live adjacent to similar larger parcels of land that are scattered throughout the residential areas of Charleswood. Although this is a single project, the decision on this case will reverberate throughout our neighborhood as further parcels surrounded either by completely or largely by R1-L zoning will be targeted for, or more likely to be targeted for, high-density residential development. If we see this cascading series of proposals, we're likely to see a fundamental change in the character of our neighborhood, contrary to the principles expressed in Complete Communities document, which requires that new developments be sensitive to the local community context. As a number of people have said, the local community context is single-family housing centered on large lots, with a semi-rural feel associated with that. A proper and appropriate development is one that uplifts everyone in the neighborhood and involves the creation of a collective vision for, by the community. By the nature of this evening's discussion, you can see strong feelings on one side or and the other. We really haven't arrived at this point, and therefore I encourage the committee members to reject the proposal. A far better solution for everyone is that the developer and the community sit down and have a real consultative process, not just a simple 1-2 hour meeting shot, and come and work out a revised and alternate plan for the development of the site. It doesn't do anyone any good to have a winner and a loser in proposals like this. We need the entire community to be satisfied that their entire community will be better off in the long run. With respect to aging in place, I'll just make this one sentence. My wife and I intend to live in our house. We have no time or place for the developments that are being proposed. We have no interest in this sort of development. We expect to age in our property, and if the city wants to assist us in aging in place, it would be wonderful to see programs and supports put in place to see us be able to stay in our house, in our home, where we intend to live for the rest of our days. That's the appropriate form of aging in place. And I'm going to end on a related note, and to one to which everybody here is going to agree with me. We need to see these meetings return to our community. It's far easier for this committee to go to our community than it is for these hundreds of people to come all the way down to City Hall to participate in this event. If you want a true sense of the community, you have to make it easy for us to attend so that we can get everyone out. There is a local school right across from this development that could have been had the gym rented for this meeting. We could have had a very strong showing from the local community and that much greater public input. I find it troubling that a zoning decision could in part be made on essentially what might be a vote count, as when people come to this meeting. It's troubling that the logistics of getting people here might be as important as the actual comments that people have when they're discussing these zoning proposals. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Councillor, I expect you have any questions? No. Thank you very much for your presentation. Mr. Hibbert.
The first name is pronounced Staney, by the way.
Oh, Staney. Okay.
I have two presentations. One's a little longer than the other. Would you like the short one or the long one?
5 minutes.
That's the short one. And I do have copies for all the councillors. My name is Stainey Hibbert, and I live at 520 Buckingham Road. And my position on this application is very straightforward. The rezoning to RMF small is inappropriate and should not be approved. The properties in question should remain R1. And here's why I think this is a bad proposal. The fact that this proposal has been in the works for several years now, it shows that both the developer's determination to see this thing through and the community's determination to see it stopped. And as the previous person just said, that is no way to come to a decision. We really should all sit down together at the table and make something workable for this site. The proposed Compass Square as it sits right now, even with these modifications, is like a square peg in a round hole. You can modify its shape, but no matter how you jam it around, it still really doesn't fit the site. Not only is it too big for the site, but it is entirely out of scale, character, and built form with its surroundings. First, you'll have to change the zoning, and then you'll have to change the rules. The people that are developing this have to purchase an existing R1 residence and demolish it in order to create an access point where the church once willingly turned their property into a landlocked site. They used to own much of that property, and they have sold it off intentionally to close down access. If they were thinking long term, they never would have done that. And I believe one of the speakers tonight is the last person to buy that lot and cause it to be landlocked. In putting that demolition order in place and opening up that other lot, you're creating what, according to the documents I read, is a flag lot, which I believe by the city bylaws is only appropriate for R1 and R2 developments. This is not either of those. And I'm curious as to what the taxable frontage is on this property. Is it the 65 feet on Dieppe, or is it the, 800 feet length that the property is? I think that the church is attempting to sell off something and leave themselves with only a dozen and a half lots, and that is inappropriate. There are guidelines for the buildings like that to have a certain number of spaces. I believe it is 106. And, you have to own the property to have the spaces. Otherwise, you just don't have them. Not only are the boundaries being stretched on the ground, but they're also being stretched into the sky. This proposal asks for a variance of another 3 feet. Other people have mentioned this. The planners have mentioned it. That's a 10% increase in the overall height of this thing. Not only that, that little puppy there is another 12 feet on top of that number. That's an elevator shaft or some kind of mechanical room. So if you add it up, it's 38 plus 12. It's getting there. And it's right behind Jim Cannon's yard. And, he's rightfully upset about it. The planner's report speaks of a collaborative effort to develop visual relationships between a complex and the surrounding homes by adding some minor dormers, etc. Somebody else stole my line tonight. This is lipstick on a pig. It really is. The presence of the Mason's Lodge, to change the subject a little bit, is barely mentioned in the planner's report. This is a private clubhouse and banquet facility that is to be slid onto the site without any consideration as to its impact to the school and the neighborhood. I would argue that it will have an impact. I was informed that the Masons would not be permitted to rent the hall to outsiders, but nothing was said to indicate that this condo residence could not use it for their own functions. So I got some questions. Are there any restrictions on how that space is to be used? What if I lived in this condo? Could I host a function for a child's wedding or a family reunion? What if I was a Mason? Could any Mason in the Grand Order of the Manitoba Masons host a function there, resident or otherwise? Will they be able to hold a liquor license for this facility? Can we expect groups of people who do not live in the building to attend functions in the lodge? Will these activities run into the night, and will the customary 10 p.m. curfew that everybody in the neighborhood adheres to apply to these people? And if there's not going to be functions in where non-residents attend, then why do you need such a large space? I propose that the creation of the Masonic Lodge on this site, the Masonic Lodge, not be permitted. I contend instead that the 5,400 square feet should be developed into either actual residential units, or better still, just be eliminated from the floor plan. It's bad enough that we have to suffer the impact of a condo unit in our backyards. We should not also have to be made to suffer the indignity of having to put up with the activities of a private men's social club. The Masons already have a lodge elsewhere in Charleswood. Let them stay there. Make them stay there. They certainly have outlived their welcome in our little piece of the world. I went to both public information sessions, the most recent one in May 2012. After that, everything went silent. We thought this project had been abandoned. We really did. There was almost a barbecue on the street this summer. But surprise, 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 that was not the case. And now here we are in the dead of winter, on one of the coldest winters on record, looking to stop this development, both by weight of neighborhood opinion and good old common sense. The application and hearing were expertly timed to catch us all off guard. Three tiny signs were posted around the church and the residents in question the day before Christmas. Now, if you wanted to push through an unpopular position when the public was distracted with other things, what a better time to do it than over the Christmas break and in this kind of weather? A cornerstone of the rationale for allowing this complex is the notion that the poor old folks of Charleswood have nowhere to move to as they grow decrepit and fragile. We moved to Buckingham in 87. There was a charming older couple living in the house next door. Abby passed when he was 94 years old. He died in his bed. He was happy to die in his own place. He'd lived there for almost 50 years, and his wife, his widow, stayed on in that house until she had to be relocated to an assisted living situation. I would really, really love to emulate those people. I'd be happy to do that. Aging in place is about living in your familiar surroundings, your own home. As Lisa, I think, said earlier, 89% of the baby boomers claim that they want to grow old in their own homes. That's exactly what my wife and I want to do. The vast majority of us around here live in single-story bungalows. My house is like 12, 18 feet tall, maybe. I've started retrofitting this thing to accommodate my aging. We've put in smaller steps. We've got plans for a wheelchair ramp up the front. I want to stay there until an ambulance or a hearse takes me out of it. I don't want to live in that, ever. And I don't want to see that out the back of my property every day for the rest of my life. Now, you knock a floor or two off that puppy and we got a deal. But that is just too much. Besides that, given the demographics of the area, I really don't think that most of us could afford to live in that thing once it's built and priced out. So, in closing, more or less, if we don't want it and we couldn't afford it, even if it was built, what's the complex being built for? Is there any guarantee that the suites are going to go to local residents? Or is it just first come, first serve? Write a check and you're in. I contend that the positioning of all of this is a sleight of hand, and that the real purpose for this complex is a means of increasing both the Mason's wealth and decreasing the church's costs, while providing upscale housing for the plus 55s who want to move into our beautiful neighborhood from other areas of town. Now, maybe it's just a retirement villa for the Masons. whatever, this project should not be allowed to happen. It solves nothing and it ruins much. What we really need is for the city to develop a new neighborhood-specific plan that addresses the wider issue of the future direction of the development of Old Charleswood. Give us something that's sensitive, sensible, predictable, and livable. Make us a plan that addresses the real needs and wants of those who live there now. Don't create a situation whereby the developers chip away at the fabric of our beloved and unique neighborhood. Don't let them drive development policy by way of incremental precedents such as what is proposed here. If you agree with the rationale for this project, how can you turn developers down when they want to convert a couple of our larger residential lots into even more condos? The thought is monstrous and preposterous. This is not the inner city. This is Charleswood, land of the big lots and the small houses. Please help us keep it that way. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Councillor, that was my question. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Steiny.
Thank you.
I'm guessing Gail Hibbert is your wife. Gail, are you going to join us? We have... You can stay right there, sure. Barb Cannons and Jim Cannons, if you're on deck.
Good evening.
Thank you.
My name is Gail Hibbert. I live at 520 Buckingham Road. If I could, before I start my time as such, may I ask a counselor, a procedure type question? I was always under the impression that there were to be three councillors here tonight. I see the two of you. I just wonder how the vote goes when there's only two councillors here to listen to our what we have to say on our side of it. How do you, like, why would there have been three and only two now?
Building is excused this evening. He's out of town. And the procedure would be two in favor or two opposed would follow that either one would pass. If there's a tie vote, the motion and the practice is that the application is defeated.
So you...
Yeah, if there is a tie vote between the two councillors, it would go up to the next committee level with no recommendation from the Assiniboia Community Committee.
So to get just straight in my head here, if the two of you do not agree with me, then it goes up, or with us, I should say, it goes up.
There are no public representations at that point, right? Right. Tell her.
Ma'am, it's just on the subdivision application. Council is the authority on the decision-making on that one, so that's why it moves up without a recommendation.
Without recommendation?
Correct.
Does that give us another chance at it? Where
it does not on the subdivision.
I'm sorry?
It does not on the subdivision. The representation will close. However, the variance application after this point will either be appealed, let's say, by either party, and then everybody who has registered here tonight will receive notice that the variance application has been appealed and another hearing will take place for the variance.
Okay, so the normally where there is no appeal, there would be appeal in this circumstance where...
Yeah, there's no appeal process for the subdivision. There is an appeal process for the variance.
For the variance.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Councillors... I must say I'm sad to see that a lot of the people that for this project that are for it could not stay and listen to our side. But I'll do my best here. I've only got a few minutes, okay? I heard on CGOB News last Saturday that the church council was very happy with the proposed condos. It sort of sounded like a done deal. It was kind of, whatever. But as I can see it, of course they would be happy. It seems that wouldn't you be if you could sell something like a parking lot and keep it for free? It seems like it's kind of getting money for nothing. It's a good deal, I think. But those of us who live around the church were not very happy. I really thought good taste and common sense had prevailed, that they had let this bad idea die. I was obviously wrong, and here I stand before you with only a few minutes to do my best to convince you to kill this zoning change once and for all. The city's own guidelines state that this type of infill development is meant for medium to high density neighborhoods in older parts of the city. While the letter of the law can be reinterpreted to allow such a thing to happen, it is certainly against the spirit of the Winnipeg Complete Communities Guideline. These guidelines seek to celebrate what is best about a community and how to improve what is not. A key policy guiding the development of areas of stability is, quote, support low to moderate change in low-density neighborhoods through development and redevelopment that is complementary to the existing scale, character, and built form. The people that live here are the ones that really, really want to, because of the large lots, the open skies, the rural feeling, and most importantly, the privacy. We love what we have here. And after 100 years of uniqueness, we don't want developers overtaking the lots of old Charleswood. Forever changing the very nature on how this community grew to be the suburb beautiful it is today. There are currently many lifestyle options available. Both the Eastern Star Chalet and the Fairmont Wood condos easily blend into the neighborhood. They do not stick out like a sore thumb. My point is that there doesn't seem to be a pressing need for yet another life lease project at this time, with reference to Vassalon earlier, and certainly no need for a project of this scope behind the church at any time. Up until now, Charleswood United Church has been content to subdivide portions of their properties into R1 residential lots. Most recently, 2007, they sold off the last lot facing DF School, and now they want to subdivide again, but not with R1 housing. Now there's irony for you. The residents that bought the land from the church, in good faith, have now been stabbed in the back by an overzealous church council. This is stepping over the line. Most of those who voted for this project either do not have all the facts or have no regard for others wanting to keep their lifestyles. Just how many of those votes for this project live in the immediate area? How many of them will have to worry about their young children safe on the roads? How is their privacy affected by this project? Would they be as happy about this project if it was in their backyard? I've met people from the church, and they are woefully ignorant of most of the details. This comes mainly from the church council and not necessarily from all their members. I believe that the long-term mainstay residents should not have to shoulder most of the negative aspects of the changes this development would bring to their neck of the woods. A constant glow from a 35-foot-high, 350-foot-long wall of light. No more stargazing into the natural and semi-rural setting within my own backyard. At least the church offers zero light pollution, blending comfortably into the night. To quote MP Stephen Fletcher, to this day, Charleswood enjoys a semi-rural environment with lots of green space between homes, forests, gravel roads, and ditches. Hopefully, the semi-rural feeling will remain. Right on. Those are the words I want to hear from my politicians. This land is zoned for houses, and should stay that way. If you allow this project to go forward, the consequences to the neighbors will be detrimental, permanent, and unwarranted. We will be full of angst and discord. I, as many others, don't want to believe that this is yet another backroom deal that was done long before this meeting was set. And what we're going through today is just a mere formality that was timed to minimize public blowback because of the controversial nature. Seems the only people to really benefit from this area are the ones with their hands in the honeypot. You are not doing this for Charleswood residents. You are doing them to them. I wish I could believe someone actually gave a damn about all the Charleswood residents. Just because you can make this change doesn't mean you should. You have the power to change our lives. Hopefully, you also have the wisdom to preserve it. Please choose to give the local residents what they want and not what the masons and developers say we need. Please keep our piece of the neighborhood R1. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hubbard.
Yep. First of all, I really resent your comment about anybody having any hands in any backroom deal or any pot. In fact, I have been outspoken about that very issue in these chambers on numerous occasions over the last 2 years. That's my first comment. You know, you asked about process, we explained process. What you fail to understand is that this process is not black and white. We can approve, reject, and approve with numerous amendments to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get at what your main points are. And the only one thing I could hear is an issue with looking into the night and not seeing the light. Are you aware that there are specialized lighting now in parking lots that shines downward, and that can be one small amendment in a list of about 50 that I've generated so far on a project like this? Are you aware that that has been
done? I'm aware there are things that can be done to quieten down the lighting of a neighborhood.
Okay.
But until you actually live in it, I don't think a two-dimensional drawing is going to explain away to me how my life is going to look after they put this wall up. And I'm sorry, all those trees that they talk about, they're barren 6 months of the year. So how do you think that I'm not going to be able to be affected by this if I can see right through them?
But you live at 520, is that correct?
I do.
Do you want to show everyone on the map where that is? Because this property will not even touch your property. No trees,
not
either
touching.
Below or to the west will be touched?
Excuse me, but not touching is not the same as not being interfered with.
Up one. What's that?
I'm still affected by what's going on here. It doesn't matter that I'm not here. This is still affected. I can see. Can
you have to speak into the microphone.
Sorry,
so it's tell me how you are affected exactly.
I can see into the church parking lot, okay. More or less. I can see the light. I can see the neighbors' lights twinkling in the background. Just because we have a few trees does not mean that we are exempt from being affected by a lit sky. And if you go to any development other than your backyard, you are going to see more light. You have to. I mean,
well, you do, but there are amendments or recommendations that we can put onto things like that. So if you express it as a concern that you don't want the sky lit up and you don't want light shining right in your backyard, we can accommodate that. If you want more trees, we can accommodate that so it's denser brush.
But we are also, you're not bringing up anything about this, but if you can then, as you've asked me this question, I don't hear any points arguing about this a key policy from the guideline book that strictly states that this should be complementary to the existing scale.
No, and I've added that along with a number of other points that you made to the questions, the list that I have for our administration at the end and for the developer at the end. So that list is growing. So I haven't asked you those questions because I've already added those questions to the list. So if you could pick the top three things that you are opposing and just list the top three things. You've already said lights as
okay.
one.
Charles Way is an original unique neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It is made up of lots, big lots with little houses on it. That's why we're there. That's what we want to see. And after 27 years, I don't think I should have to look at a wall of windows. Windows. Every house is going to have how many windows? You're going to be in the bathroom, you're going to be in the kitchen, you're going to be in this. That does not add extra light. Your question about shading the lights from the parking lot and helping our neighborhood not glow, that doesn't count for the windows that everyone sees. How are you going to hide them? How are you going to blank them out from my view? You can't. So to me, that's light pollution. And I don't think that, you know, we should have to shoulder that. One more thing here. No, it's not here. No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Liberty.
Thank you. Barb and Jim Cannons are up. Beverly Ross and Gary Ross, if you're in the audience and would like to speak. No. Opposed? Do you wish to speak? No. Okay. The Ross. All right, Mr. Cannon, please proceed.
Thank you. Actually, I do have a handout for you in case I don't get through all of the details. I have a lot of numbers, and you may want to be able to see them in front of you. And I don't even have my presentation. It must be back here. Thanks.
Did you find what you
yes.
were looking for? Okay. All right, please proceed.
My name is Jim Cannons. I live at 558 Buckingham Road. This is directly behind the proposed 350-foot-long three-story complex. So no, I'm not happy about the idea of a giant wall longer than a football field right behind my home. There are too many reasons to cover in 10 minutes. I was told 10 minutes, by the way. So I will jump right into several illogical statements and conclusions reached in the report prepared by James Veach of the City Planning Department. In James' defense, I've met and talked to him on several occasions, and to be honest, I cannot believe that he would reach the conclusion to rezone as stated in the report. My only conclusion is that there was so much pressure from somewhere at City Hall, and I'm not suggesting it to you, councillors, that he may have even felt that he had to recommend acceptance in order to keep his job. The report was just unbelievable. There's about 8 examples of illogical statements and omissions leading to his recommendation, and I'd like to go through them as quickly as I could. First, and most of these things show how the developer is trying to squeeze this giant building into too small a lot. First, let me talk about how much property is really available for development. The amount frequently referenced is 2.1 acres. But the report acknowledges that the city requirement is for the church to have 106 parking spots. The proposed plan has just 17. Yeah, 17. The new complex is providing the remaining 89 spots for church use. The reality is there's just 1.5 acres for the seniors complex. Yes, 1.5, not 2.1. The report also indicates that the zoning being requested requires a minimum lot area per unit of 1,250 square feet. If I multiply 1,250 by 64, I get 80,000 square feet as being the minimum requirement. This is 10,000 square feet of land more than is available to just meet the minimum requirement. And this doesn't even include space for the Masonic Lodge. Why did the planners accept that 2.1 acres be used? Second, let me talk about parking. Between the church and the 64 senior units, the city requires 185 parking stalls. The applicant proposes 200. This leaves 15 spots for the 5,400 square foot Masonic Lodge. Are they going to check with the church and the seniors and the school for conflicting events every time they want to hold a gathering of more than 15 people? Of course not. There are going to be even more occasions than today that cars are parked on the street right next to the school. The current dangerous traffic situation will get even worse. A third point about the report prepared by city planning. Setbacks. The report states that the bulk of the building is set back from the rear property line of existing residences by an average of 71 feet to 140 feet. Let me give you the real facts. As has been said, first of all, they forget about the Masonic Lodge. It's located 30 feet from residences on Dieppe. Yeah, 30 feet versus 71 to 140. On the Roblin Boulevard side, guess how close the proposed complex is to these back property lines? I'll tell you, it's 10 feet. 10 feet compared to a stated average of 71 to 140 feet. On the Buckingham Road side, the setback is 71 feet. So therefore, the report concludes, and I quote, setback from the existing rear property lines by distances much greater than a street right away. Hardly. The reality is that if a street is built behind my property, as per the city's long-standing plan, this 35-foot football field length wall would almost be in the ditch just across the street from me. Not exactly what the applicants and planners are implying. Fourth, the planning report states, and again I quote, the predominantly 35-foot building will not create any additional shadowing beyond that which would be expected from a single family dwelling of the same height, end quote. Are they trying to tell me that this football field length wall just across the potential road behind my house is not going to block the setting sun more than a series of single family dwellings? That part of their justification is ludicrous. The fifth little gem is that the planners recommend approval of rezoning with minor changes. How they can even use the word minor on a project so out of character with the neighborhood is hard to comprehend. Sixth, the report summarizes the comments made by people completing the surveys at the public consultation meetings. It indicates 45 comments in favor of the project and 68 raising concerns. Did this not raise any alarm bells with the planners? More people were concerned than in favor. Seventh, the applicants indicated the four public consultations. I think we've talked about them, so I'll skip over most of what I had to say, except for the fact that the fourth supposed public meeting in September 2012 occurred when Bill Palmer, a vocal spokesperson for both the Charleswood United Church and the Charleswood Masons, invited me and two others, specifically two, to a private review of a new proposal. Four of us attended and made it quite clear that a building of this size simply was not acceptable in such a small amount of space surrounded by our homes. Their response was that they had wasted enough time already and they would go ahead anyway. This was despite the Masons having previously said at the first public consultation that if the neighborhood was against the project, they would not proceed. And last, but only in the interest of time, the report fails to discuss the actual location of a portion of the complex. It replaces a retention pond in spring and when it rains. It is as much as 3 feet lower than the current church parking lot. Who do we in Buckingham Road sue when our backyards get flooded more than they do now, or maybe even our houses get flooded? Is it the seniors who might unfortunately decide to locate in this complex? The city cannot absolve themselves of responsibility if they simply say that is the developer's responsibility to ensure that proper drainage is put in place. I also have a few other short comments and questions for the Masons, GW Architecture, and the church. The online report includes a list of 70 communications against the rezoning, plus two petitions containing 438 names. It contains just 5 communications in favor, 3 of which are from Reverend Michael of the Church, Bailey Wall of GW Architecture, and Bill Palmer of both the Church and the Masons, plus a petition in favor. It contained 1,441 names. I would ask how many of these 1,441 people understood what was really being proposed? How many of them are speaking tonight because they really are in favor? They understand. I expect, we've seen it's very few. Also, Reverend Michael, your email mentions that the church is a vendor of land and not a partner in this development. The church will be short 89 parking spots from that required by the city. The developers, or the seniors who might move in, are providing them. You are advertising the congregation that they can use the Mason's bus to come to this meeting to offer support. Are you really not a partner in this project? Do you not care what you are doing to this neighborhood? I would like to ask, and I wrote this in based on some of the earlier comments from those in favor, I would like to ask the applicant how they are going to stop seniors from accessing their units from the south end of Dieppe. They can stop them from turning left and going south, but they can't stop them from coming in from the south. Councillors, to conclude, I would ask you, why is a 5,400 square foot Masonic lodge even being considered in a project on such a small amount of land currently zoned for single family lots? It shouldn't even be considered. Even without the Masonic Lodge, this wall along Buckingham Road is longer than a football field. This starts to approach the length of the MTS Center or Investors Group Field. This is hardly a small multifamily development. Rezoning shouldn't be approved until after detailed financial plans are provided and evaluated for the major infrastructure issues facing this location. High infrastructure costs do not justify such a large building being squeezed into such a small space. And please ask yourself, is this what the voters of Charleswood want to be the direction of Charleswood? The answer is no. You should not be approving this rezoning. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Councillor, do you have a question?
No, thank you for coming. It's a very clear presentation.
Yeah, we've got it here. And the Rosses, you were to be registered in opposition, correct? You're not speaking.
In opposition.
In opposition. Thank you. Lee Davis.
I would also like
to speak. Oh, you'd like to speak to you,
yes,
ma'am?
Would.
All right.
Well, actually, not being proficient at it, but I am going to.
Oh, okay. You're Mrs. Cannon?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Cannon.
And I have coffee for you. Good evening. My name is Barb Cannons, and I live at 558 Buckingham Road. I wish to voice my opposition to the proposed development behind the Charleswood United Church. There are a myriad of reasons for my opposition, but I would like to focus my time on the soft issues, those intangibles, in an attempt to capture the emotional psyche of those of us who have chosen to live in the area known affectionately as Old Charleswood. Perhaps, councillors, you will begin to understand how deeply the love of country life within city limits flows through us who reside here. In 1970, Jim and I were two relatively young country kids who had come into Winnipeg to attend the University of Manitoba. Upon graduation, we were newly married and looking to purchase our first home. At the time, people at Jim's workplace all seemed to be buying in Westwood, so we asked our agent to begin our search there. On looking at potential sites, we asked the question, where are all the trees? To which the agent responded that if we wanted trees, we should be looking in Charleswood. Hence, despite our friend's horrified reaction of, you're thinking of buying on that side of the river, we bought our first home on Laxdal, then known as Royal Road. Thus began our love affair with Charleswood. I was teaching at Dieppe School. We appreciated the small town atmosphere, and the friendly semi-rural neighborhood felt like second nature to us. By 1976, we were thinking we would like a slightly larger home. Knowing that we also wanted a larger property and knowing that these lots rarely became available in Charleswood, we did our due diligence and looked outside the city limits into Headingley, St. Andrews, and St. Francis. But still, we kept coming back to Charleswood. Eventually, our perseverance paid off, and we found what we wanted, our property and home on Buckingham Road, where we have lived ever since. Over the years, our two children attended schools in the area, beginning with Dieppe School, and we found ourselves totally immersed in the community. We were active volunteers in all aspects of the kids' activities, and yes, I even taught Sunday school at Charleswood United Church and accompanied Christmas pageants there. Our large lot allowed the kids to play actual games of baseball, soccer, and croquet in the backyard, and the long driveway was great for games of street hockey rather than having to play out on the roadway. Charleswood was our home, and like the other prairie people we found in our midst, we enjoyed the camaraderie and the sense of community that was uniquely different from other parts of the city. We also appreciated the natural surroundings, the wildlife, the trees, the quiet, almost lake-like feeling on summer evenings. We were aware that we were benefiting from the church's forested property, and we knew that one day we would probably lose this beauty. We knew we would be saddened by this eventuality, but as an R1 zone space, we envisioned single-family neighbors behind us. Twice there were rumbles of developing a multifamily complex on the property, but such plans were deemed by the city to be inappropriate for the area. In fact, in the church's own minutes from an annual meeting in 1994, it was noted that the church was not allowed to develop anything other than single-family dwellings on this piece of property. So, imagine our dismay in March of 2012 when we heard a rumor that the church was planning a large development on the site. My phone call of inquiry to the church was forwarded to Bill Palmer of Buildings and Grounds. On contacting him, he told me we would have to check to see if he could speak to me about the plan. A week or so later, he called me back, described the project, and assured me that it would be real nice. I asked him for whom and questioned whether he would like it in his backyard. He got quite angry with me and told me that I had to move on with the times. And just as a side note, based on comments, in that original conversation, the building that was described was exactly as it is now, 35 feet high, three stories with an underground parkade, 64 units. He also started into a diatribe about the then-deceased Bill Clement's vision of Charleswood, at which point I knew I had no further desire to continue the conversation. At this point, I still thought I was speaking to a representative of the church, as there was no mention of the Masons' involvement. Only after speaking to Gord Gibson, chair of council, did I glean this information. Ironically, Gord told me at that time that if the neighbors were upset about the development, it would not be pursued. I wonder what happened to that consideration, as it was abundantly clear from the outset that there was considerable local opposition to a project that was so densely populated, so oversized for the property itself, and so capable of dwarfing the surrounding modest single-family homes. This project is totally out of character with our locale, and for that fact, most of Charleswood. Also of interest was the fact that a number of us represented by Charleswood neighbors are also members of Charleswood United Church, and yet we had no knowledge of this unanimous decision to sell the property to the Masons. Throughout the consultation process, a number of untruths and misinformation were being fed to the public by the Masons and GW Architecture. For example, I overheard the comment at the second public hearing that those people on Buckingham don't need all that property. I also heard that apparently all of us on Buckingham wanted to sell the back half of our properties, which was totally not the case, and I found it interesting that someone from the developers could be speaking on my behalf. One church member also told me that those people on Dieppe don't really matter, as they've already lost their privacy to the parking lot, as if a 35-foot monolith behind them was of no consequence. Such insensitivity, disrespect, and lack of understanding of the neighboring residents, along with the manipulations of the truth and omission of details, have been the norm throughout this ordeal. The billing for this development has been the much-needed housing for the poor seniors of Charleswood who have nowhere to go when they wish to move out of their homes. Well, firstly, at 55, many of these folks will be 10 years younger than I am. I'm still out there and working every day and planned to stay in my home for many years. The price point is definitely not catering to those coming from modest homes. We were told at the open house session that the price to buy in would be about $160,000 to $170,000, along with approximately $1,500 a month in rent. And then I've gone on to say that currently there are a number of potential options available, but others have addressed this, so I will skip through that part. But I would also like to say that the Vasselund structure has proven itself. They've done their groundwork. They've got their proven infrastructure in place. And it's far more desirable location in terms of setbacks and significantly less negative impact on the neighbors. As well, Fort White is planning new condos, and others are planned along the Sterling Lion Parkway. Why did the Ridgewood South developers indicate so few multifamily designated areas as if there were truly such a need? The drawings for Ridgewood South also showed that any of the two- or three-story units were adjacent to major thoroughfares. Neither Buckingham nor Dieppe would qualify as such. With so much available land now ready for development, why would it make sense to try to squeeze this monstrous structure onto the equivalent of three of our large lots? Is it because both the United Church and the Masons see an opportunity to meet self-serving monetary goals at the expense of the neighboring residents? A greater need in my mind is more infill single-family residences. I don't know how often I've heard people my age say their kids who grew up in Charleswood and are now married with young families would like to return to the area but can't find homes available for them. Charleswood needs to encourage young families back into the area. Have any of you seen the population numbers at the local schools such as Royal, Westgrove, PJ, CGH, River West Park, never mind Chapman? They are all declining. We need more young people in Charleswood for a healthy mix of populations. The hypocrisy of those who say they want to stay in Charleswood and are promoting this structure are the ones that I'm most disappointed with. I would imagine that most of them moved into Charleswood for the same reason we did, the semi-rural, unique character. These people enjoyed their time here, but now feel it's okay to destroy it for those of us left behind or for the next generation to come. I wonder how many of them in good conscience would say that they would like to be staring at something of this magnitude if it were behind their own homes. I speculate not many. I also need to say that I found the timing of the postings to be most despicable. After all this length of time from March 2012 till now, to choose the day before Christmas to put out the zoning notice is unconscionable, especially given that the two main advocates for this project pride themselves as being charitable Christian organizations. For many of us, this time of year is the most sacred and cherished, a season to share with family and friends, some of whom we only get to see once a year. This year's Christmas was tarnished by this self-serving mercenary venture. Councillors, I hope this profile gives you a glimpse of our life in Charleswood and offers a perspective about the passion for home and community that those of us living in the area share. The impact on us will be huge if this project is approved. In closing, this rezoning application should be refused. It flies in the face of all that seems just and right and threatens to destroy forever the Charleswood we know and love. It's one thing to buy into an area zoned for this type of structure, but to have your privacy and love of home usurped from an area zoned R1 for decades seems almost criminal. The plan totally defies logic and falls short of proper infill guidelines on so many counts. The project has been cloaked in subterfuge, secrecy, and manipulation on the part of the developers. The church is guilty of mismanagement of the property, opportunism, and dare I say greed, and members of both organizations have shown complete disregard and lack of respect for the neighboring residents. I truly fail to see how the city planners endorsed this project when it's filled with a multitude of flaws and is far more invasive than plans on Elmhurst and Cathcart and Vanscoy that were rejected less than a year ago. I hope councillors find their way to consider our perspective fairly and objectively without bias or politics coming into play. We residents feel that we're being caught in a tainted process. As the little guys, we're feeling overshadowed by those who have power, when it's really the little guys who provide the foundation for strong, vibrant communities. Please restore my faith in common sense and do the right thing for local Charleswood residents. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Our next presenter, Lee Davis, please join us. Next on the list would be Norma Lucas and Wayne Lucas. If you're going to speak, please come on down to the bench. Lee, proceed.
My name's Lee Davis. I live at 23 Polaris Avenue. I'd like to start by thanking all of you to be here. I know it's your job, but it's not a nice night to be here. And I'd also like to thank all the people that have spoken in opposition tonight. They've done a magnificent job so far presenting their case, our case. After having lived in Charleswood for most of our lives and having been married in Charleswood United Church, my wife and I moved to Vancouver for 2 years to pursue academic pursuits. Upon returning to Winnipeg, we returned to Charleswood, surprising many people in Vancouver, surprising many people in Winnipeg for that matter. We found ourselves fortunate to be able to find a place eventually in Charleswood. After having rented a condo for 2 years, we proceeded to build our dream house, which we currently live in, and have two children, one of which currently attends Dieppe Elementary School, and the other one that goes to Sunnyside Daycare, which is attached to the school. I've long wondered when Charleswood would begin to develop south of Rannoch and in and abouts. I've lived in Charleswood for 32 years, spare the 2 years that I lived in Vancouver. I was witness to infill building firsthand when two new homes were filled into an empty field across from my childhood home on Carlotta Crescent. This made sense. The new homes fit the area. New homes filled in space along our street to the north and south of those fields, and those fields also backed onto Charleswood Road, where new houses soon followed as well. Friends of mine moved into new housing developments with the extension of Scotswood Drive through to Rannoch Avenue. During these builds, my parents and I never once heard of complaints from the neighborhood. Sure, people liked the green space that was soon to be lost, but the area understood that the area did need to grow, and grow it did, in an appropriate manner. Houses surrounded by more houses. Charleswood is very fortunate to have a community that has a rich history of country living. It also has the ability to grow with the space and the room it has throughout the community, but this R1 locked piece of land is not such a spot. My main concerns about this development is that it's been touted as something that the community needs in terms of housing for the aging population. I found it fortunate that I was able to follow Barb, and she referenced new, younger families need to find places to move into Charleswood as well. So I don't think that an aspect of one portion of the age of a population in Charleswood needs to be restricted just to one. It needs to be a community involvement. What this development is really all about between the church and the Masons is money. The church, and rightfully so, has a piece of land that they consider a burden from a financial standpoint. If they are able to sell the land, they can decrease their debt load. Makes complete sense. The Masons, they want to have a new place to meet. So by going into the agreement with the church, they get both of that. One thing that was mentioned that I found concerning was the lack of information that was given to the public in terms of the cost of being able to buy into these condos. It was talked about from the standpoint that it would be affordable living. I haven't seen anything in black and white to really say that it is affordable living for anybody who wants to potentially buy into this condo complex. Another thing that was talked about was that providing people that a place to live where they could not have the burden of having their own homes, yet this is not an assisted living scenario, which we actually do have.
Raised by a number of other speakers, and I am going to ask.
Thank you.
I even had assisted living, and what would these units look like to
Thank
incorporate
you.
That?
Yeah, enough said. Sure. Obviously, from an emotional standpoint, I have a concern for the safety of my children, not only for the long term, but in the short term in terms of the construction area that would be going on about during this time as my children make their way to and from school and the daycare. The last thing that I did want to say is that I'd like to strongly urge the councillors to consider how their decision today reflects on your own positions of office. Some councillors have been very vocal about wanting City Council to be more responsible with its land dealings, and I really do applaud this. I think there needs to be more of it. Rezoning this plot of land, in my opinion, is not responsible governance, both from the church, the Masons, and from the city. I'd like to end by just saying that by putting something like this into this place, into this area, squeezing it into this spot, is not a way to preserve what has been called already tonight, Charleswood the Beautiful. And I hated that slogan when it first came out, but I've learned to understand what it actually really does mean in a greater sense. It means being able to give people an opportunity to live in an area that has been stable and continues to be stable. Thank you.
Right on the mark. Thank you, Lee. No questions?
Thank you.
Mr. and Mrs. Lucas, Norma and Wayne. Following them, Karina Kirk.
My name is Norma Lucas. I oppose. I live at 15 Polaris Avenue. I am a longtime resident of Charleswood. Charleswood, that name says it all. Charleswood is a very, very distinct neighborhood in the city of Winnipeg. It is bordered by Assiniboine River, Assiniboine Park and Forest, and the Hart Trail. There is a lot of wood in Charleswood. Of all the suburbs within Winnipeg, it is the one that has a unique small-town feel to it. Because of its abundant green space, because of its roaming herds of deer and other wildlife, because there are some unpaved streets with ditches, because of its lower than normal population density, because of its mixture of single-family homes, old and new, large and small, and a mixture of large and smaller lots as well. There are streets with very long lots, such as Buckingham and Dieppe, which border this proposed development. Most of these long lots in Charleswood are heavily treed. Over the years, some of these long lots have been subdivided, which resulted in new little streets or developments interspersed within old Charleswood. With newer homes on smaller lots, such as Polaris, where my husband and I built in 2005. This is all part of the wonderful character of Charleswood. It does not compare in any way to Lindenwood's, Waverly West, Sage Creek, or any other subdivision. I can't say I've lived in Charleswood all of my life, but a good part of it. I lived on Jane Moore with my parents. Choosing to raise our young family out of the Winnipeg, out of the big city, my husband and I have built and lived in several homes in a small satellite community. And we have built and lived in several homes in Charleswood, which were in those areas where small pockets of green space were developed. When we moved back to Winnipeg because of our business, we specifically chose Charleswood because of its small town character, its almost semi-rural atmosphere. This is why residents of Charleswood love Charleswood, and this is why we have 559 signatures, in spite of the short notice and in spite of the frigid temperatures and the holiday season, and the most inopportune time to schedule this meeting. People were even scrambling today to get their names added. They are opposed because they want you, city planners and city council, to plan properly, to not allow a massive multifamily structure to be built where it is surrounded, except for the church, on all sides by smaller single-family homes. You have our petitions representing opposition to the rezoning as in your file, and they are color-coded to show yellow immediate around the church, 131 names, orange, Buckingham, Dieppe, and nearby homes on Eldridge, 79, pink, other names from Charleswood, 136, and those not highlighted, others with a Charleswood connection. We have a map here. Where did it go? This is actually the immediate area surrounding the project. Roblin, Buckingham, Dieppe, Polaris, Cambrian, and Eldridge. And it is colored to illustrate pretty much 100%, just about 100%, of all residents that signed the petition to oppose this development. The red is opposing, the black is the church, and the gray is the school. There are some gray lots, they were vacant, were unable to contact, or were neutral. There's actually been at the top right-hand corner, those on Roblin, three out of the four have signed at the last minute to oppose this development. And please note, the people that signed the opposition petition live here and are affected by the development. They are not people who were asked to sign a petition in favor of the development because they belong to the church or that are affiliated with the Masons. The houses surrounding this project that has been mentioned already are small, with heights nowhere near a height of 25 feet even. A looming three-level structure with underground parking with a high density of 30-plus units per acre, no green space, only cement roadways, parking spots, would be an unacceptable intrusion to the neighborhood, and it will loom over them, shading them, overlooking them, blocking them from their previous views, sunsets being their only view in the winter. People who live here do not want the character of their neighborhood changed so drastically. This must be considered when making choices for infill housing here, totally different from infill housing in the inner city, which could increase neighborhood land value, whereas here it will definitely decrease neighborhood land value. If the rezoning is passed, it will set a precedent and endanger other of the many small green parcels within Charleswood neighborhoods. It is not just the immediate neighbors who are against this development. Most Charleswood residents want to keep the wood in Charleswood. They know many other locations could meet the same fate. Your home is your major lifetime investment, and when you have bought and lived in a home in a single-family residential area as unique as Charleswood, it is unfair of the city to suddenly disrupt people's entire lifestyle and community by a rezoning. Current single-family homeowners have been asked to compromise regarding this development. We are not against development of the land, but it should be kept in character of the neighborhood, and this character is lower-density single-family residents. It would be much more suitable and acceptable to have single-family lots developed, perhaps giving more people a chance to custom-build their home, as we have done. Our son had been looking for a lot to build in Charleswood and ended up having to buy a home and renovate it. It is stated that single-family residential is not cost-effective for this development, and higher density is necessary for the high infrastructure costs. But it is the bad planning on the part of the church that has resulted in this small parcel being landlocked and so difficult to develop now, because they sold off without consideration for future development the single-dwelling lots on the outer edge along Dieppe. And may I add, at a good price, because they had the forest behind them. Well, no longer if this goes ahead. The church is betraying the neighborhood, valuing their own gain ahead of the lives of the people who actually live here. Not something a church of the people should do, in my opinion. High infrastructure cost is not justification for increasing the number of units to be built here. Conversely, the high number of units required to justify the project is the reason not to proceed. In conclusion, the rezoning should not be passed because it does not fit the character of the neighborhood. Any new development in Charleswood should fit the character of the neighborhood. And I'm asking you to vote, please, to protect the neighborhood character. And I apologize for using that phrase, but basically that's what it boils down to. I also want to add, I am a senior as well. I plan to stay in my own house as I age, as my parents did in their Charleswood home to the end. My father-in-law will be turning 90, and he is still in his own home. And that is the intent of the term aging in place, not moving into what I consider to be a ridiculously expensive life lease. Thank you.
Question? Thank you, Norma. Wayne, do you have comments? All right.
I can put this here?
Sure.
I got a boxing match.
My name is Wayne Lucas. I live at 15 Polaris Avenue. This picture shows what a three-story condo with underground parking will look like behind a house on Dieppe. It goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyways. It does not fit the character of the neighborhood. I want to state that I am a Mason from a different lodge. Now, I also received a letter, and I submitted it to you, that it must be the Grand Master of the day, because the letter that I got from the Grand Master last year was to cease and desist using the word Masons, Freemasons, Masonic Lodge, Charleswood Red River Lodge in any communications or statements involving this project. I was informed that Charleswood Red River Lodge was told the same. So I guess the Grand Master this year seems to like this thing. So anyways, our bylaws state that we cannot mortgage or borrow money. And there was never a vote throughout the whole Masonic body to vote for this thing. The reward for using the Charleswood Red River Lodge name is for a 5,500 square foot lodge. Will be built for them at no cost. We were told by Brian at GW Architects that the cost of the lodge is included in the infrastructure costs of the condo. A little background. After a lodge meeting, there is a repast where food and alcohol is consumed. Therefore, a liquor license will be needed. The Charleswood Red River Masons meet once a month on Monday night for 9 months, nine times. I suggest the intent is to have weddings, socials, and banquets in this hall. We were told by a couple of residents at the Eastern Star Chalet that the Masons were trying to get a liquor license there in order to hold these events, and the residents there banded together and blocked the Masons from getting a liquor license. Now, I want to state the letter of application to the city that GW Architects put in states that they want to build a 64-unit life lease condo. There is no mention of it being a seniors or a 55-plus, which is a major point used to justify this project. There is no mention of Charleswood Red River Masons, who have been using their name to garner sympathy for the project and their influence to drive support. Plus, once this property is rezoned, they can build any kind of multifamily residence if there aren't enough people buying into this life lease. In my opinion, if one uses half-truths, misinformation to promote something, it's really of no value. Paula, I recall an email from you that stated, at no time was I ever made aware that the intentions of the Masons is to build a lodge for them to hold their meetings in. I have always been told this was for housing for seniors, perhaps a senior center, and some amount of parking. In my opinion, there's some smoke and mirrors have been going on here. Charleswood United Church needs more parking. Not less. They need more room in the near future, not less. Their congregation is growing. They already had to expand. There's a large subdivision going in at the end of Dieppe, and even a bigger subdivision going in called Ridgewood South. There will be a lot of young families looking for a church to join. It is a proven fact that if there is no parking and it is too hard to get into a building, people will go elsewhere. Selling this property, you are cutting off future growth, which could be your downfall. They've already showed some short-sightedness. Whomever your advisor is, fire him. This alone should be the reason to stop these proceedings. But now I have a number of questions for James Veitch. If you obviously you'll take note and answer them after. My first question. In your report, you have listed stats of the baby boomers and over 55 population as part justification of approving this life lease. Why have you done so when the application is not for a 55-plus lease? There is no law that I could find that stipulates life leases must be 55-plus or seniors. I think this is an important point. I don't think it's for 55-plus. My second question regards comparison to Fairmont Woods, which fronts onto Grant and is just a few blocks east. Originally, The developer was going to build a three-story condo, 57 units, 4 acres of property, turned down by city planners. The reasons, ruled out of character of the single-family neighborhood, concerns about setback, loss of natural habitat, traffic volumes and safety, parking on Fairmont, privacy of adjacent buildings, building height and drainage, too dense for the size of the property. Fairmont's Woods is 4 acres, and this one is two. Fairmont Woods is now two-story. Why, this is my question, why was a three-story, 57-unit condo on 4 acres ruled out of character for the neighborhood when now you're saying 64 units, three-story, underground parking fits the character of the neighborhood on only 2 acres? Third question, again, 57-unit complex, 4 acres, fronting on a major road, turned down because of traffic volumes and safety. The Dieppe complex enters and exits right across from an elementary school and a nursery school. Does the city put no value on child's life and safety? Could you explain this paradox? My fourth question, I assume the Fairmont was going to be 35 feet high. This one is 38. 35 feet was deemed too high. Why are you saying 38 feet is now not too high? Next comparison is Centennial and Lockwood developments. You may recall the rail lines along Centennial Street were abandoned and residential housing developed. City planners made these stipulations. Respect and provide support for the existing character of this mature community. All units are bungalows to reduce the impact of the existing sight lines and to maintain the scale and character of the area. Maximum height of 20 feet, single story. So my fifth question, why did your department stipulate a height of 20 feet in order to respect the existing character of the community of single-family dwellings in River Heights? And you're saying a height of 38 feet is acceptable in this single-family dwelling community. My next comparison, getting close to it, 543 Elmhurst subdivision. The developer wanted to build 12 two-story houses on 1 acre lot. We've heard this before. Your department stated that this application does not meet the statutory criteria of the City of Winnipeg Charter, and that it is not consistent with Plan Winnipeg and any applicable secondary plan, creates a substantial adverse effect on the amenities, use, safety, and convenience of the adjoining property, including an area separated from the property by a street or waterway, is not compatible with the area in which the property to be affected is situated. So my sixth question, why were 12 units per acre not compatible in April in Charleswood, and now 8 months later, 32 units per acre is ruled compatible? My seventh question, planners state that 543 Elmhurst development would have adverse effects on the amenities, use, safety of the adjoining property, including the property across the street. Across the street are houses and a road entering another subdivision. Across the street from this life lease is an elementary school and a daycare. Would not 64 condos across the street from a school be considered to have even more adverse effects and concerns of safety? Eighth question. In your report, you have stated that there will be parking agreement between the church and the residents of this life lease. What happens to the required, I might have my figures wrong, 123 parking spaces the church must have if this building is not built and the land is sold? Are you putting a caveat on this land that 106 parking stalls must be retained for the church forever and a day? And you, our elected representatives, city planning, city councillors have shown some wisdom in the past. Turn down this absolutely ludicrous request to cram 64 units into a small 2-acre parcel of land. 12 two-story homes in an acre. It's ridiculous. And you noted that and turned it down. This project defies all logic and common sense. The developer wants to make as much money as they can, total disregard to the effect it has on the neighborhood, and of course the negative effect it will have on the community at large. It seems that the planning department is manipulating the bylaws and stretching them to extreme limits of credibility in order to approve this development. In conclusion, this is an ill-conceived project on an ill-conceived choice of property. Please, the rezoning should not be passed. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have lots of questions written down. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karina Kirk. Can I come and speak? Yes? No? Candace Ellis. Yeah. Marion Newsom and Dale Newsom. We're opposed? Okay. Gavin and Elaine Reed. Okay, ma'am, I'm just going to ask you if you can bring forward information that we have not heard. We've heard a lot of things on several occasions, so if you've got something new
to add. I just had questions that I'd like addressed.
Okay, well, please proceed.
My name is Candace Ellis. I live at 566 Buckingham Road, directly adjacent to this. I think somebody's already asked you about overland flooding. I would also like to ask specifically what drain and sewer system is this project being tied into? Is it Hearthstone? Is it the current Dieppe or Church? Or is it the federal sewer system underneath the Roblin Boulevard? We've heard that there are going to be a few dormer peaks raised to 38 feet. I'd like to know what overall percentage of the total building this will be. What is the current height of the church, not including the spire? We've heard it's less. This is actually to the church. In unanimous vote, I've heard, I know three people that, of church members that were not included in this vote. How many of their 700-plus congregation voted on this? And is this public knowledge? Was it a raise-your-hand kind of vote, or is it... closed ballot. Can you list me three other condos, especially senior condos, that are 32 units per acre and surrounded 100% by R1 housing? And I do believe that's all. I did purchase my house from an 80-plus-year-old lady. I am a senior in training, and I intend to do exactly what she did, age in my own home. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Well, I don't know if I'll be able to get an answer tonight on the church's voting process, and I don't know how relevant that is to our decision. But
that's perfectly fine. Yeah. I would like, since the drainage and the sewers and those, the overland flooding were just given to you tonight, I want those addressed tonight as a public consultation was never given. The Ridgewood precinct has actually done a very good job on full disclosure and being candor. If we require seniors housing, why don't we have the Ridgewood precinct 100% seniors housing community? We can call it the Arizona of the North. Thanks.
Please come forward. Thank you. Please state your name, ma'am. What's your name?
Janet Ali. Thank you, Mr. Veach, for asking me to voice my opinion. My name is Janet Ali. I'm a senior, a retired school teacher of 45 years, and I live at 539 Deer. In 2007, I bought 539 Deer from the church and built my retirement home. I am now a novelist and chose this spot for its peacefulness, privacy, country-like nature appeal. I spend quality time in my backyard because the feel of nature is conducive to aid my thinking. A condo disturbance will deprive me of both income and quality work. I do not think this is fair to myself and to the other seniors who live in this area, who have chosen this area for its country-like peacefulness, for their retirement. I am like others who have all worked hard to keep the roof over our heads and have contributed much to the culture and economy of Canada. So we deserve a break. We deserve to live out our lives in the way we imagine it, in a peaceful area, quiet peacefulness. Please be considerate and do not take away our dream and send us scrambling now in our senior years. There are numerous backyards that flank this two-acre parcel, as you could see. It is landlocked and has now become a deer's natural habitat. For the proposed 64 condo unit, 2 acres is rather small. A three-story unit will seem like, according to my grandson, 7 years old, like a King Kong, out of place among bungalows. 64 condo units will cause the area to become too noisy with vehicles, since there is no shopping area in the immediate vicinity. Seniors will have to get groceries, doctor, dentists, opticians, etc., so they'll have to drive. We'll have constant fire units and ambulances to disturb us, so please do not rezone to put us under stress. I admire the Masons. They failed once in a similar proposal, I was told, but they have courage and perseverance to make a second attempt. They are trying to sway the public to buy their units by whatever. I was told by one of my friends who live in, what do you call that place now? What do you call that place of Cathcart? Eastern Star. Eastern Star. But when they sign up, they had to commit $1,000, which was non-refundable. I'm not sure of that. They cannot tell us the Masons cannot tell us the real cost of the condos. I commend their outlook for financial gains. They are now proposing an entranceway at 521 Dieppe and are not taking into consideration the welfare of citizens and school children who are our future. I was told by my lawyer that the city will not pass this as it is against the law to have a public entrance, street entrance, less than, I'm not quite sure, 50 meters or something away from the school. So even Polaris is too close. Maybe that is why the city did not have a pave it as a street. They left it as a paved track. We also, who oppose this calamity, cannot be swayed by cheap psychology, and we too do have the courage and perseverance and patience, and we have unified to oppose this rezoning because we see it as wrong. It is a landlocked area in front of a school, and it is a disturbance to our lives. There are numerous other large pieces of vacant land in Charleswood where the Masons could build their dream condo. I need to mention some personal problems I faced from the Masons concerning this unit. Two of my brothers, who are also medical doctors and Shriners, Masons, 33 degrees Scottish Rite, asked me to mention this point, so bear with me. In 2010, while I was in Calgary, Mr. Palmer phoned me asking to sell 539 Dieppe to the Masons to use as an entranceway to the landlocked 2 acres. They offered me well over $200,000, which would allow me to pay for capital gains. He assured me that the condo will be built within 9 months, and he mentioned the name Paula, who I didn't know, who is a new councillor, was their friend, and was going to have it approved right away by city. Any questions directed to Mr. Mason? I would be, Mr. Palmer. I would be paid shortly after when they sold a few units and cleared up some of their debts. This sounded misleading to me, since houses take about 6 months to build. A large unit will take more time. I contacted my lawyer, Mr. David George, who told me that their $5,000 deposit was a joke for such a large proposal. We countered the proposal with a few minor changes and a $40,000 non-refundable deposit. Mr. Palmer was enraged and said it could never happen and mentioned that they had at that point no investors. That year, I came early in December to take my three grandsons Christmas shopping. I always enjoyed the pleasurable expressions on their faces. Early the next morning, I received a phone call from my lawyer, Leslie Hendricks, who took over for Mr. George because he had retired. She said that Mr. Palmer had called a meeting with me at his lawyer's office. I was not consulted, so I declined. She assured me that it was okay, and she was also attending the meeting. So I went with Mr. Palmer. I had no idea what that meeting was about. Their lawyer talked a bit and asked me, finally, why I was hesitating to sign their proposal. Was I looking for more money? He was insulting me. I asked if he saw a for sale sign on the property and got up to leave, instructing my lawyer not to deal with them unless it was a cash sale. In 2011, I built a house on the lot and moved in. I attended the Masons' first public meeting in April the 4th, 2012. Their display plan had my lot as the entranceway. I spoke up about it, saying I had built a house on the lot and was living in it, and so their plan was misleading. And I tried to cross off my lot on the map. I couldn't find a pencil. It enraged Mr. Palmer and some of the other Masons, and as it depicted the Masons as flouting something that was untrue. There were two other misleading statements, I don't remember them offhand, which I pointed out, so I'm not in their good books. At their second and last public meeting, October the 10th, 2012, we were all asked to fill in. There was no meeting. When we got there, we were asked to fill in a form like this. How would you identify yourself? What features make this neighborhood special? What are the best approaches to improve safety and security in this neighborhood? What are the best approaches to achieve an accessible and inclusive neighborhood? What features are important to create a sense of community? What type of green space is most needed in the neighborhood? How can the neighborhood be improved for walking? How can the neighborhood be improved for writing? And many other questions with nothing bearing on the condo. I was amazed.
Ms. Sally, are you close?
So this was a fast to get favorable signatures from seniors. For this meeting, they are busing seniors from Eastern Star Chalet and asking them to sign in favor and leave on the next bus or the same bus, which is the Eastern Star Chalet is owned by the Masons and it's subsidized, I was told, by the government. The seniors were told to sign in and leave. These seniors pay $425 per month rent and express their desire for low rental accommodation, not 55-plus life lease. I have a few friends who live there, and that's how they communicate.
Are you close to being finished your presentation, ma'am?
Pardon me? I'm almost done.
Okay. Thank
you. I was given 10 minutes, and I'm not even 8 minutes in my presentation. When there is heavy machinery digging their basement for underground parking, it will cause vibrations that will affect our basements. This will eventually cause cracks in our basements and problems for us. Who is going to repair our basements? I cannot afford it on my small pension. What about the noise factor disturbing the neighborhood and the school? Children, some of them will rush to see what the equipment is being used. So please help me understand, why are you there trying to rezone this area when it is a hazard? It is more of a hazard than a help to seniors who are looking for low rental. life lease condos where you pay exorbitant down payments and fees, which completely strip seniors of their finances, are not acceptable. As a senior, I chose my own home to live out my life in dignity. I intend to get paid help if I am disabled. Work out the math, seniors. Your house is paid for. Why don't you just get paid help to live in your homes? It will cost you cheaper. Just look at the news. In condos, care homes, anywhere that houses a conglomeration of seniors, there are numerous problems of fights, abuse, and even murders.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up now.
I am finished. Just one more paragraph.
Thank you.
Mr. Veach asked me, when he spoke to me, he mentioned that he had helped in redesigning the condo unit with the help of city planners. Then it made me understand that this was a done deal. So why sneak this meeting in this frigid winter month? I know that the city is supposed to be trying to aid seniors, not put them under stress. The city members will see the absurdity of this proposal and turn it down, I assure you. They will not rezone for a small landlocked 2-acre parcel of land. The Masons can build elsewhere. Councillors, remember the process of reciprocity. If you don't know what that means, what goes around comes around. And do the right thing for all concerned. You do not want to be responsible for children's accidents on DR. So do not change the rezoning. Let us live out our senior years in the peaceful way we imagine it to be, and the way in which we have worked hard to make our dream a reality. So help us by not rezoning. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alley. Do we have a question? Any questions? Thank you. Colin Nichols? I'm sorry? Oh, okay.
I just have to go grab my stuff. I didn't know it was up next. So. Sorry. Just give me one second.
All right. Following Colin, we'll have Jennifer Stebner. Opposed? Okay. Crystal Norman. Christine McElijah. Christine
Michalajczyk.
Oh, it's Ukrainian Christmas, I forgot. Maureen Miller. Opposed?
Oh, okay. Right. I actually have to go grab something first. Just to okay. Give me 1 second.
What's up? Betty Ann Fred.
Marianne
Zembreska. Okay. Doug Michalajczyk. They must get it. Dale Kirk. Okay, well, you come on down and wait on the bench at the back there. Did I hear from Gavin and Elaine Reed? I know I called. They're gone home. Okay. And the Newsham, Marion and Dale. Okay, great, thanks. Okay, Colin, you're up.
Do I have to submit these?
Are you hanging in there? We're going to hear him and then these two and then we'll go for a break.
I thought the votes were worth it.
Okay. So you're just submitting this as in communication or as opposition?
Yeah, communication.
For opposition.
Okay. It's okay. No, I'll just do it for you. Okay.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
Hello, my name is Colin Nichols. I'm from 566 Buckingham Road, which would probably be the last property that just touches this complex that would be developed. I've lived in the St. Charles neighborhood for 31 years, and I've also lived in Charleswood for now 10. My feelings about this whole development, proposed development, is not only that it does not fit in the character of the area, but it does not adhere to any of the guidelines, or very minimal guidelines, the Winnipeg City guidelines set out. I would really concentrate everything on traffic flow and parking and a few other topics. Right now we're going to look at, on the current slide, is what is traffic flow on the Robland Dieppe, according to the Public City's reports. Average weekly daily traffic on Robland Dieppe is 29,600. When you take a look at that on using the City of Winnipeg census board or calculations, it's proven fact as it's on their own websites. When you compare that to other intersections within the city, you can comparably put this to Century Street, 25,100, St. James Street, 29,000, and Ness Street at 29,600. So if you look at those magnitudes, we've all traveled on them. Pretty darn busy. When you take a look at the traffic concerns on Dieppe itself, currently it's calculated by Ridgewood South, which had a traffic study done of 1,240 current vehicles per day, in conclusion with the City of Winnipeg's reports. 930 vehicles per day will be added to this due to the Ridgewood South precinct. When you add the brand new library that's going to be moved on to also with an exit onto Dieppe, you're going to add approximately 60 vehicles per day because according to the library, it's going to consider 40 parking positions for staff and people joining the library. So you add that by 1.5, which is the current calculation. You'll add everything together, and you'll end up with 223, also with the addition of the vehicles proposed for the new condo residents. This is in your administrative report of the Appendix A subsection and the traffic of this current report that's been submitted by a GW architect. My question is, does this include any of the traffic from the Mason's Lodge? Yes and no. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. When you add all these vehicles down Dieppe, whether or not you tell everyone not to turn left, not to turn right, or anything like that, those vehicles are going to accumulate 2,453. Effectively, that doubles everything. This is the Ridgewood self-traffic study. If you look at it, this is 1,240, the 930 that was added. If you continue on, looking on to everything that's involved, you will be now doubling traffic on Dieppe. It's straight-up numbers provided by not only recent reports and traffic studies that are done by the City of Winnipeg. How about other traffic concerns? Traffic from the Mason's Lodge. You have Masons where they have other activities. Traffic from nearby streets, because you can't quite get onto Roblin sometimes. Sometimes you have to, people from the different in the surrounding area know that if they can go down Dieppe, they're going to have a set of lights and they're going to get to go left or right. And when you look at all this, Dieppe really functions as a collector street. and because of just because of that traffic signal itself. Continuing on, when you look at everything, traffic in the condo, maintenance personnel, church members, garbage collection, delivery vehicles, emergency vehicles, you keep on compounding one after another, you're going to add up. We'd have all everything that's involved on the trash collection, delivery vehicles, and everything like that. Those are unknowns. There's no actually statistics that you can say how many people are going to arrive, except for when you get down to maybe when the emergency vehicles show up. Each one of these things will add additional vehicles per day. So let's look into the Mason's Lodge. What is the Mason's Lodge? There's nothing in the report states that whether or not this is a private club that is not licensed underneath the certain categories that's within the city. Or is it a hall rental? We have no idea whether or not that is.
Down numerous times. I'm going to be asking the developer when he comes back what exactly this was meant. It wasn't described in the outset of the presentation.
Oh, okay.
I've got all of this down already.
Okay, it's just a matter of whether or not it was going to be 22 or 54 vehicles that were going to be added.
Or whether it's going to be there. It wasn't presented as originally there.
Okay, so. No problem. When we add everything out, it's be 2473 or 2513 vehicles per day. Let's take a look at emergency vehicles. How will they influence the area? Emergency vehicles are almost exponentially as the population ages. Stats Canada proves this point. It's noted in the next slide. Increase of emergency vehicles will also add additional hazards to the residents in the area, just general school traffic. Kids walking to school, general pedestrian traffic, as there's no sidewalks in Charleswood, basically. That's sort of a quotation mark. Just in this area, there's very limited. Most people have to travel and walk on the streets in order to walk their dogs or anything. As here, when you take a look at the rate of emergency vehicles, it grows up exponentially from 55 up. As those more travels, the more dangers are occurred, whether or not it's one place or another. The proposed condo entrance is obviously across from the DF school entrance, where we're going to have not only the Sunnyside daycare, and we want to know whether or not even if the school parents were even made aware of this. We believe that this is a huge negative. To bring into what your answer was for the amount of school buses that are involved, currently at 8:30 p.m. there's two. There's two at 12, or sorry, four at 8:30, two at 12:30, and four at 3:30. This is what the overview will look like for where buses currently enter. They enter behind the new proposed library. Huntington has not replied back to me whether or not there's a joint agreement with the city or with the Kings to be able to travel through and behind their property. I'm still waiting for a response. That's where the buses will line up, and right across from the way there'll be the new potential proposed entrance. Right there we have a photograph of the house itself that's going to be transported. I didn't have an actual photo of a bus being there because I had to do this sort of so that I'm not intruding on anybody bringing their child in or anything like that, so I had to sort of improvise. As you see there, it's going to be right in line. When you take a look at the other perspective, that's what you're going to look at when you're going to be coming out of this proposed new complex. Right, Jason, where there's going to be, you can say kids, pedestrians, cars, just additional traffic, just everything that you could possibly put throughout this, it's going to probably be at that point. Other things that the proposal requests is a variance to allow parking as close to the road as possible in the land currently known as 521 Dieppe. The report downplays the guidelines, saying that it would be consistent with the actual characteristics of the surrounding parking lots for the school and the strip mall. When referring to the building height and setbacks that are outlined, The report ignores the actual characteristics of surrounding properties and reinforces the guidelines of why inconsistency. Why is there such an inconsistency here? Parking stalls, as Councillor Havispeck said, it's that most of it's all been there. There's just this minor glitch of the 54 that could be missing within the parking spots. So where are they for the Masons Lodge? There's nothing that's been given. Proposal of the development will affect roads, noise levels, parking lot, light pollution, privacy and general safety of the public in the area. What I would like to do is just show you what typical traffic is. This is a little video. It's about 45 seconds long. I'm sorry if it didn't come up. Sorry. I don't know why it didn't come up. Sorry. Give me 1 second, please. Oh, there it is. Sorry. Found it. It's hiding. This is what they're going to look at today. This is what they look at today going down. This is what we call congestion. Standard day. No timelines. Obviously, this is just held at it. This is what the people deal with at Dieppe on a regular basis. How do the residents not only back out of their yards? I don't know how they get on the street, but they do somehow. It must take a really long time. And they must have to plan ahead. In conclusion, I just personally would like to keep this parcel of land behind the church to the existing regulations under the R1 designation. And again, to look at the magnitude of this, my home is 1,150 square feet. We're saying 64 of my houses are putting on top of each other to fit here. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin. Any questions? No. Okay, thank you, Colin. We're going to hear Dale, and then we're going to take a 15-minute break.
I don't need a break.
No? You're okay? Okay. All right.
I want to read this, but it's because of the gentleman that lives at Roblin, at 47, sorry, there's the Fred Douglas property right beside it. He would be affected with the zero clearance of it being presented on his back of his property. He wanted to submit this to, well, I want to read it, but obviously no,
that's
more likely not going to.
Yeah, no.
I don't have three copies, but.
We'll take a copy and make some
like
copies, for sure.
Like
it'll be submitted
like
as part of the
package. In red, please.
Petitions here as well. Thank you for that the video. I think that really tells a lot about the situation with the traffic flow in front of the school. That's exactly what I was going to be speaking to, was the safety of the children. My name's Dale Kirk. I'm at 99 Avril Lane. I'm about a mile from the school. But my kids, my wife and I have two kids, 7 and 9. They both go to Dieppe, Ecole Dieppe, as well as Sunnyside Child Care. I'm there 4 days a week in the mornings, and in the winter when the roads are not as wide, everything's more restricted, it's fairly congested. And taking a left-hand turn when heading northbound on Roblin into Dieppe, there's no turning light. You can get one car through each light. People take chances. It's not an area where you need more congestion. Definitely, we saw a garbage pickup there as well. Just one more thing that really makes it a tight area to get around. So a couple of things I wanted to say, definitely concerned about the safety of the children at École Dieppe. I've had a personal experience. My wife and kids were walking across the church parking lot. There's some, I'm not sure if it's a formal arrangement where the school can use the church parking lot for parking, for functions and that. My wife had parked there with the kids, picking them up for an appointment, was walking across the parking lot, and were almost hit by an elderly man coming out of that parking lot. And instead of an apology, he put his window down and yelled at my wife and kids for crossing through the church parking lot. And she filed a complaint with the police because she had his license number, and we haven't heard anything on that. But that's the type of thing that's going to increase, are those close calls, those accidents where our kids are at risk, and we don't want to endanger them. Why would we approve this when things are already congested and we don't want to endanger the people in that area walking the streets? The families that have bought houses on Dieppe and Buckingham, with the understanding that the area was owned as single family, now they have this potential monstrosity in their backyards, invasion of privacy that they were used to. And it's just not right. There's been many examples here of some precedent where things were turned down. And so why are we here yet again discussing the same issues? So in summary, the increase in traffic directly across from the school parking lot is a huge concern. You've got teachers, school buses, daycare staff, daycare parents, emergency vehicles, everything sharing that narrow roadway. And I'd hate to see this go ahead and have accidents happen. Safety is paramount. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do we have any questions? No. Thank you, Gail. We appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to start reading some names off here. Darlene and Terry Boucher. Okay. Janet Johnson. You're in opposition. You don't want to speak. Okay. Sydney Castillo. Okay, you're on deck. Jumei Zhu. She's gone. Okay. Right. Patty Campbell and Jeff Smithson.
Hi, my name is Darlene Boucher. I live at 668 Buckingham Road. Just to orient you, I live south of Eldridge, and my property does not back onto the church property at all. It backs onto houses behind me on Dieppe, so there's a very good likelihood that I will not face any development behind me. I'm speaking because I guess it's sort of opposite. I'm saying not in my neighbor's backyard. I'm also an active member of CCHP, and I'm in favor of both development and increasing the density of housing in Charleswood. I would like you to know that CCHP sent out information about this to 350 people in our contact list, telling them about our concerns about the development, because we believe that it could impact some future developments, particularly those north of the Hart Trail. And we did not receive any negative, anybody saying that they were opposed to our position, but we did receive some saying that they strongly supported us and it was important to go and speak about this. Those of you who remember that I presented before may recall, but probably not, that I've often been concerned with the process and the transparency and the opportunity of individual citizens to understand the development process. And believe me, I spent a lot of time researching. I've had very sore shoulders, and I do not know how you do it. Your minds must be spinning. I was looking at developments that have occurred in Charleswood to see if I could understand sort of what the rules are, and I looked at two in particular. One of them was approved just a year ago, January 8, 2013, at 368 Laxdal. If you remember, that was the development between Laxdal and Bramble. They're putting Geraldine Road in, and they ended up dividing it into 21 smaller lots. There was a lot of community opposition to that, but the reasons cited for approving the development were that it would help preserve the rural feel of the area and was a fair compromise for the neighborhood. So 543 Elmhurst has already been referenced, but there are a couple of things that I did want to mention about it. 543 Elmhurst is that condo development that was at the north end of Apex, and where they were going to put in the 12 individual single-family units. Now, they had done a pre-referral or a pre-application consultation with the planning department, where they had a 29-unit, three-story condo, and they were told that that would not be a fit for the neighborhood. So that, to me, is quite comparable to what they're trying to do here. Councillor Havoc, you made mention of the fact that people move to and live in Charleswood because of the existing plan. There was an existing shadow plan for the development, and Councillor Nordman, you said that you had lived in the area and that the appropriate use of the land would be to allow single-family dwellings. And Councillor Fielding said that it was obvious the community would support development, but it had to be the right development. And I think that whereas the community surrounding the church may not have initially supported any development, I mean, who wouldn't want to keep the land for themselves forever? I think that they are gradually coming to realize that they've got to work on the right development plan for this land. The proposed development behind the church appears to have a lot of support for it. But I would say that those numbers are highly influenced by the church members and the Masons. I know they brought a bus in today, and they have a captive audience for getting their signatures and their petitions. But there is significant opposition to this throughout Charleswood, and including many people who are not directly impacted by the development. This proposal obviously fits less with the existing neighborhood than the condo development of 12 single-family units did. In fact, I sort of was thinking, if I were on Sesame Street, I'd be singing, one of these things is not like the other. But there is another point that I really want to make. The existing plan for the shadow plan for Charleswood there's an existing plan that preserved the specific land use. My concern with the existing shadow plan is I've been told for this development that the Masons are planning behind the church that because of the amount of infrastructure that has to be put into this property, the drainage, etc., that sticking with the existing shadow plan is not an economic feasibility. And I understand that you are sort of compensating the people somewhat for by including the cost of some lots or something like that. Some of those costs will be applied when development occurs on the existing lots. But would not those same conditions apply, that the existing shadow plan will not be feasible financially for the other lots that are not included in this development? And when at some point people want to subdivide those lots, because that will happen someday in the future, their only option is going to be to put in a higher density development. And if the higher density development goes in on the church property, does it preclude the planning of higher density development with the remaining properties? And I'm not necessarily speaking of a three-story condominium. but it would seem to me that the land to the west of the extension of Polaris, is that it, would possibly be developable, but the land to the east of the extension of Polaris, that this would leave them unable to at any time split their lot in a financially feasible way. And do you understand that, like what I was saying there? No.
You're talking about the long lots there.
Yeah, you know, well, all of them. When you divide that, if it's not feasible for the church to put small lots on their land, then presumably the drainage issues are all the same on the other part of that property. And it won't be feasible for them to have those small lots either at some point. So are you precluding that land, that other piece of the land, from ever developing? It was just a thought I had that I thought was different than the other ones. We have talked about the elephant in the room, the fact that there are 700 acres of land ripe for development. We spent till 2:15 in the morning getting that one passed, didn't we? So we all know about that one. So there's the opportunity there for that. The bylaws allow for a low to moderate change in an area of stability. And this development would change the density in that area from about 4 units to 8 per acre to 30 units per acre. That's an increase of 700%. Now, I know councillors are really underpaid. Let's assume you're getting paid $60,000 a year. I know you're woefully underpaid. But I really don't think, and you deserve a raise, but I really don't think that people would be happy if you voted yourself a moderate raise of 700%. Low to moderate just isn't, this isn't in the scale. People have talked about this creating a dangerous precedent. What I think it creates is uncertainty and distrust about what the rules are. People don't understand why is one project turned down and another one approved. And for the church, you know, I'm sorry that their land isn't worth more money. But that's one of the difficulties you face when you own land. We bought 2 acres of land on Community Road with the intention of building on it in 1983. It was just at the time that the rules changed. And kind of right in between when we bought, and anyways, we paid $25,000 for the 2 acres. They're now valued at $45,000. And I'm hoping with Ridgewood South that they will go up in value, but you know what? They may not, or they may not in my lifetime. And if I had put that money in the bank, I would have $93,000. So if the Masons want to buy some land to build a senior's residence on, I can sell it to them.
Harry? Okay. We're going to lock in on 5 minutes here.
Okay. So. I won't be long. As you see, I have no papers with me. My
Great.
Name is Cindy Castillo, and I'm at 529 DF Road. And as you can see from this beautiful diagram here, that I'm right there, and this is directly affecting me. Now, as I said, I've got no papers. I'm not going to use any of my education. I'm just going to tell you as a mum. And as from what I know, and ironically, I actually researched the name Masons, and what does it mean? It means a group of men who care about the well-being of every person. If you're a Mason here, listen up. You care about the well-being of every person. I moved from 3495 Eldridge Avenue 1 year ago with my family. My husband had to work and go back to school at 50 years old so we could have enough money to move into that house because we had a back alley where we used to live. So we not only, the house is not much bigger than where we were, but we got to move there because we actually had a yard and no back alley. Yeah, there's church, there's different functions that go on. But you know what, that's okay. Now, I have a 5-year-old, I have a 19-year-old, I have a 16-year-old, and I have a 5-year-old. We had one vehicle. I couldn't go wherever. So now he goes to Ecole d'Ep. Now that street in front of us, it has no sidewalk whatsoever. Now as good parents, we want to teach our kids what? To use the crosswalk. And one day he's going to want to go to the library by himself. Well, let me tell you, I either say, okay, let's jaywalk and go across the street to the sidewalk, or let's walk very carefully down the road till we get to the end. And you know what's going to happen? There's so much construction coming in. It'll be in and out of here. And you know what? I'll tell you, I love people, and I love seniors. I volunteer. I go to their homes. I care for a 90-year-old who lives in a two-story by herself. And so I love seniors, and I tell you, the last thing I want to see is one, and I don't want to say all seniors can't see and all seniors can't hear. I'm not saying that. But I wouldn't want to see an accident happen. And you know, Roblin and Dieppe, the road curves, you know how many accidents I've seen? I don't want to see anyone hurt. I don't want to see a child. I don't want a senior citizen. And so there is going to be more traffic. There's going to be more noise. Because what happens? What happens with senior citizens? They have what? Grandchildren. Oh, let's go visit Grandpa. Let's go visit Grandpa. Oh, let's have a little lodge meeting. Oh, let's have a party. And what happens to my beautiful summer nights of sitting in my backyard? What happens when my kids want to have fun with their friends and their friends are screaming? Am I going to get a call? Excuse me, but your son threw that ball and that ball hit my da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't think so. I really, really, I'm talking on a very personal level, think it is the saddest thing I have ever seen. And you know what? Just on a note, my father is 77 years old and he was living on his own and I didn't want to put him in a home. So guess where he's living? With me. And he has money, and there's no way he would be able to afford something like that. So I'm appealing to you on a very personal level. There are so many children. There can be so many accidents. And if we're going to care about the well-being of every single person, let's start right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Cindy. Alex and Richard Jordanson. Thomas Fred. Okay, come on down. Victoria McDonald. Deanne Coombs. Joan Cormier. Yeah, Joan Cormier. All right, Thomas.
Yes, my name is Thomas Fred. I live at 541 Buckingham Road. Specifically, just for a bit of information, I'm a retired professional landscape architect, member of the Manitoba Association of Landscape Architects and Canadian Society of Landscape Architects. I worked for the city for 30 years. For the first 10 years, I was the city's parks and recreation planner. My job was dealing with projects like this and how they would impact on the environment and as far as providing park space, green space with regards to these any type of development. I was heavily involved right from day one from Linden Woods, White Ridge, et cetera, all those major developments. After that, I was the city's landscape architect for 10 years, and part of that job was dealing with, for the entire city, dealing with, again, developments, but and all types of park developments, whether it be the Cinnamon Park Pavilion, the zoo. I would have been involved with the stadium if I retired 6 years ago. Okay. Now, in the last 10 years, I was with the planning department as the project management coordinator. So I was responsible for construction projects for the city. And I worked extensively with every councillor. And unfortunately, Councillor Norman, you and I never had a chance to work together because the last community committee meeting I attended was in fact, you were at it. And I bring that up simply because of the fact I'm puzzled at this project. I'm puzzled at the fact that my wife and I attended the two open houses at the church. And I should mention we were both members of Charles United Church, and we were not asked to vote at any time for or against the project. We were not aware of this vote that happened, so I don't know when it occurred. At the church. It's a mystery to me. At any rate, at the first proposal, they just had some very rough sketches over top of a photograph. And everything's drawn was drawn out of scale. The buildings were half the size of what they should have been drawn at. The next drawing presentation, they had another set of drawings. Again, they were totally different. And now they have this one, this monolith on this little tiny site. I'm shocked and stunned. I'm literally shocked and stunned that the city planners were to even contemplate this type of scale of project on this small a lot. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine it ever being approved in the past, especially with the previous councillor, Councillor Clement, involved with it. Now, why I'm bringing this all up specifically is because what are they going to do next? If this zoning application is approved, what is the developer going to propose next on this site? I mean, we've seen three different options. This is by far the most bizarre. I always consider Charleswood United Church. When you drive into Charleswood, everybody considers like one of the landmarks in Charleswood. It's a large building. Well, this building literally dwarfs Charleswood United Church. And it just baffles me again. Okay, now, having said all that, I am really terrified, literally terrified, what we're going to see next from the developer when they realize they can't actually build this on the site. What other designs are you going to come up with once they get the zoning? And it opens up a huge can of worms because, again, they don't have to come back to residence meetings, et cetera, and all that. They just have to put proposals forward to the planners and et cetera once they get the zoning and they get to get their building permits. It's a totally different process. So we don't have an opportunity for residents to see what the next phase of this could be. Now, more specifically, there was a number of comments that were brought up. One of the comments was about the buffer trees along the east side. And and James Beach, I should point out, was a landscape architect. He graduated with a master's degree in landscape architecture, so he's very knowledgeable about trees and all that. Anyway, excuse me. What I should point out, though, in my experience with the city and previously with the province and with the federal government in previous jobs, I know that development has a huge, dramatic effect on trees, on existing trees, any type of tree. So when the developer says, we're going to protect these trees, and we're going to save as many of these trees as we possibly can, my experience has shown that cannot happen. With this size of development, those trees will be eradicated. They will die. They have no choice. The root systems will be demolished. In order to create proper drainage, they'll be having to grade around these trees. The overall canopy of the trees will be destroyed as well because of the size of the building going up. Now, Len Van Roem and I, we've dealt with many, many projects in the past. And I was talking to him in between, and I said to him, I don't care what they say they're going to do to preserve these trees, it will not work. And I could show you hundreds of examples in Winnipeg. One of the perfect examples was all the effort we went into in the 80s to in the early 90s to preserve the Assiniboine Woods subdivision. We spent so many hours. We actually went and marked all the trees that we want to save. And Harley Richardson was the proponent of the project, and he was walking the site with us. And Bill Clement, same thing. And the Van Roem family were involved with it. And one of the key trees we wanted to save, that big, beautiful tree, the heritage tree, died. And I said it was going to die. I mean, no matter what, with all that heavy development, it would die. What I'm saying here is that I don't want the developer to say, which they said so many times to us in the past, the city and to the residents in the past, well, we can landscape. We can use landscaping to hide the building or reduce the impact of the building. Landscaping should not be used as a method to hide a bad design. Landscape is put in there to enhance a project, not to try and hide problems. And as other people had mentioned here tonight, as far as in the wintertime, there's no canopy. The canopy's gone, these trees. And so these buildings, this solid monolith wall will have a huge impact on the neighborhood. No question about it. Another thing I want to point out is parking. And again, we live on Buckingham Road. And like I said, we live over here. We always know when there's a major event going on at the church, if there's a major wedding, whatever else, because the people park all the way down Buckingham Road. And anybody else in the audience who lives in Buckingham can agree with us. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Anyway, so we know about the issue of parking there right now. They don't have enough parking for the church and for the size of the church, for the major expansion of the church, as it is now. With this development, they'll have zero parking in the future. My parents, I've just My father just passed away just a month ago, and we had been going through the various stages of end of life as far as where they were living. And one of the places they lived was the Parkway on Wilkes Avenue. And they moved in when it was still under construction, first half of Phase 1. They were the first residents there. When they built the parking lot, they figured, covered parking lot, they said, oh, lots of parking for this first phase. Well, in fact, it wasn't. They ended up having to use the entire visiting parking lot. The entire visiting parking lot was converted to staff and to emergency vehicles coming in and for residents, because a lot of them had additional cars and they wanted additional lots. They ended up building a gravel parking lot. That was filled. And then they had to build to use up the street, and that was filled. What I'm trying to say here is that what we've got is a church, which at various times has large quantities of people coming in, of course Sundays, for weddings, for funerals. Bill Clement's funeral, as you probably remember, there were people parked throughout all of Charleswood, in fact, trying to get to the church. This type of project will just dramatically compound that problem. The number of people that come in to a seniors complex to visit their family members, the number of visitors they get throughout the day, will take up that most of that parking lot within a very short period of time. The number of healthcare aides that come in at all hours of the night, all hours of the day, will be using up that parking lot as well. And I know there will be major problems with parking in the whole area as a result of this development in the future, when all these different things happen, irrelevant of even the Masonic Temple going in there. That would just further compound it. Let's check my notes. I wasn't going to speak tonight, but I thought I should.
It'll be long, but anyway. Okay. Welcome back.
Okay. I think that's enough said. But I just wanted to get those points across that I am very concerned that there's things being said here that are not fully explained in enough detail to look at both sides of the story. Yes, I oppose the project. Yes, I live in the neighborhood. But irrelevant to that, I look at this as a planner, as a city planner, and as a landscape architect, like I said, for 30 years of the city. And I just don't see the logic of this massive a project in this small site. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Thomas. Paula's got a question.
Yeah, just hang on. Thank you for coming out. And I was just curious, you started off your presentation talking about the survey and that the church had done. Do you know around what date? Were you out of town when it was conducted? Anything that you can recall on that or why you weren't included?
No.
Did you recall it being announced at church?
Well, we saw the flyer, I mean, the program, yeah. One time talking about the project, but that was the end of it.
Okay.
So I'm not too sure when the vote actually occurred, if they called people in for official vote or if it just happened at the morning, at the 9 o'clock service or at the 11 o'clock service. We just don't know when it actually occurred.
Well, we can ask that question definitely when the developer comes back up. I'm sure you're familiar with that kind of a process.
Right. Oh, yes.
If there were, I guess, any subject twos on this project that you could see, what would they be that you could live with this project?
Oh, from my point of view, it still comes back to the what all the people said here tonight. I love Charleswood. I've lived in Charleswood for years and years and years. I worked in Assiniboine Park. I mean, I love this area. We love the deer. I'm passionately in love with animals. And to put anything but residential, R1 into this location or this whole area, it goes against my logic in the whole area of planning. I don't know how else I could say that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Thomas.
Okay.
You know what? I've lost your sheet. You're going to have to tell us your names.
Victoria McDonald. Hi.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, my name is Victoria McDonald. I'm a resident of Charleswood. I live at 695 Hearthstone Road. So I'm not directly affected by this development, but I certainly use all those access roads around, and I drive. We drive by Dieppe probably once a day. I'm also the chair of CCHP, and I'm really impressed, I have to say, given some of the different ACC meetings that I've attended, at the number of people who have chosen to speak in opposition, I might add, and the quality of their arguments and the research that they've done. So I'm actually, kudos to those individuals. I'm totally impressed. I just wanted to make a couple points before I started, and people have covered so many things, so it's really narrowed my scope, and that's okay. I just want to indicate that to note, and it's not my sense so much, is that the people who are voting in support of the development, it's not clear to me that they're actually Charleswood residents. They may be, but when I hear stories about people being bused in and things like that, and that it's not clear to me that they're actually indicating support as Charleswood residents as opposed to support as Charleswood United Church members and Mason members. And somehow that just doesn't quite sit right with me in terms of this overall process. I don't know why, but it just doesn't. The also I wanted to clarify is that at the very beginning of Len Van Roon's presentation, he was able to insert CCHP and Charleswood Historical Society type of information, but I just wanted councillors to note that he did declare he was speaking as an independent, so I just wanted to make note of that and clarify that. The other thing is that I want to make note of is that there's been a lot of talk of senior housing, and I don't really want to get into that. I feel that the meeting has been almost hijacked by that issue. But I really appreciated Lisa's presentation talking about seniors' needs assessment. For anybody who wants to, and I know you appreciate that, if you're going to make sound, rational policy decisions, you need to have good information upon which to make those decisions on. And she talked about a seniors' need assessment for Charleswood, and I think there's some merit in that. So we're talking about what is the vacancy rate of seniors' facilities, and what are the economics involved in making in seniors being able to afford those houses? These are very important questions to be answered and will shed some light on whether or not this development is really merited. I'm too really interested to see what the housing costs will be. But I think one of the things I'm going to speak to about is policy. And over the weekend, Darlene and I managed to get our hands on our Winnipeg's infill guidelines for multiple family development in areas of stability. I've never seen the document before. And much to my amazement, when I looked at this document and I got it through another person who got it through another person, it says that, and there's an actual diagram here that shows that how it's listed, and there's all these policy documents such as this one, but they're not posted. It's actually right here. There's 8 policy documents that aren't on the website, and they're important policy documents. This one in particular, there's one with Active Transportation Action Plan, and there's another one with Parks, Places, and Open Spaces Management Plan, amongst others. So they're not on the website. I would really encourage you to get these on the website so that people have access to them and they don't come as a surprise. In this document, I was really impressed with how the introduction was, and I think it's important to take some time to note. It says that these guidelines were as recently developed as 2011 for multiple family dwelling in areas of stability. The guidelines were developed with input from residential neighbor associations, the design community, development industry, and the City of Winnipeg. They actually had stakeholder working group assembled, and they met for a series of joint sessions to increase collaboration. 3 stakeholder working group meetings were conducted to identify issues, establish goals and objectives, and develop infill developmental guidelines for multiple family developments in the area of stability. Like, a lot of work went into this policy document, and kudos to the city for doing that. It also says that the infill guidelines are to be used in conjunction with the Winnipeg Zoning Bylaw 200/2006, so we know about those before. So what I want to do is speak to a little bit about these policies, because I'm a little alarmed at the amount of work that's gone into developing a good policy document, and yet what we see is that this document isn't really being adhered to for these infill developments. In fact, there are variances being put in to bypass what is in this document in other areas. So that's a little alarming, thinking that we have these great policies that are not being applied. And I think maybe it's because of loopholes, maybe it's because of wills, maybe because it's persuasion, but that's a little alarming because it means that the guidelines are being inconsistently applied to infill housing, infill areas in Charleswood. And so this is why we're seeing discrepancy, and this is why people are coming here and pointing out discrepancies, and that's not right. I think that's a fault of variances being applied perhaps inappropriately, and consistent decisions aren't being made in conjunction with these guidelines. I mean, just for a couple, for example, site selection 2.2.1, it says, encourage development along streets with sufficient capacity to accommodate anticipated traffic generated by development. It says that medium density, multiple family infill housing has a potential to generate significant traffic and therefore should be located on arterial or collector streets to minimize the effect on local streets. Anyway, that's contrary to what this development and certainly what people are saying. Also, it says building setbacks 2.2.2. It has all sorts of criteria for setbacks, but three of the variances for this development are for the setbacks. Why is that happening? 2.2.4, site characteristics. It says preserve established, healthy, and mature landscape, including mature trees where beneficial to the project and viable. Replace, if possible, or replace with new trees if possible, and avoid at all costs. Protect existing, established, healthy, and mature landscape. That's to be preserved. So I just wanted to go back because right now, I know that the developers have said that they're going to make every effort to preserve existing trees. Apparently, there's going to be some consultation with Charleswood Historical Society in terms of that process. I'm not quite sure how that's going to go about. To me, the more legitimate way of making sure that happens is through the city, through the naturalists. I don't want... That's who is accountable for those types of trees, and that's the appropriate route to go. So that I'd like to see that in place in terms of assessing the effect of the development on the existing trees. 4.2.1 is vehicle access and circulation. I didn't want to write that one out. That one, sorry, I'm a policy gal, says... vehicle access and egress for medium-density multiple-family infill housing development should be oriented on arterial collector streets where possible. So that's not being met. The location and orientation of vehicle access and egress should minimize the impact on pedestrian environment, pedestrian safety, and adjacent properties. Questionable. And so there's that piece of the policy document. And... I think that's all I'm going to mention for now. It does meet some of them. It does meet some of the criteria in this policy document, but there's lots that it doesn't, and why? And also I'm really concerned about these variances. I've seen them in the past, variances to this, variances to that, and to me it erodes the integrity of the original policy document that's made. If you're allowed to make variances to accommodate any request that any particular person has managed to push forward. So I find that very alarming because it doesn't bode well for the further infill development of existing for Charleswood down the road. So that's really all I have to say. Do you have any questions?
You're done?
Yep, I'm done.
Thank you. Paula?
Yeah. Just a couple of things, Victoria. Thank you for coming out and for patiently waiting. You know, I've written down a few things. Dieppe, though, when I pull it up, is a collector. We
is
know
it?
That from our iView maps, yeah. And we
is
can
it
check.
Really?
It's a collector and it's a P2. I mean, and we can...
Oh, no, I believe you. I didn't think it was a collector, though.
Is.
I thought it was a local street.
In terms of the determining sensitive lands, could you see as a condition, perhaps, that a sensitive natural ESNL report or a blueprint similar to what was done on the Ridgewood plan be conducted?
Would well, I would never sense? Say no to that, right?
Of course.
I would never oppose that. Right. I mean, I know that in the city's report, I think, you know, James had consulted Rodney, and Rodney had indicated, Rodney's the naturalist yep. of the city, yep. had indicated that there are some high-quality oaks, moderate to high-quality oaks mm-hmm. in the area. So, you know, I just think that if the developer is going trying to push their position or sell their idea to say that they're going to preserve these oaks, I think it needs to be done. That needs to be assessed, just like the previous fellow said, in a viable manner and mm-hmm. done with the appropriate people.
Okay. That's all I have.
That's
it. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Victoria, we appreciate it. All right, we are going to take a 10-minute break. We'll be back here at 10:35.